Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the pound for pound best radio show around the world, it's Leave It In The Ring. He took it from crack to rap. Now he put out two anthems a year, and I just want to rock for
things. What's going on, everybody? Oh man, I just stepped on the scene. Hey, what's going on, everybody? It's your host, 97 Ruff. I know I got my man 916, Chris, out of Sacramento. What's up, Chris? How you doing, brother?
None, man. I'm trying to deal with something going on with my computer. Hopefully, this situation is getting straightened out before it gets out of hand.
You know, man, I had something going on with my computer last night that I even had to call it in and have it serviced over the phone because, I don't know, it was some block. It was, for some reason, it wasn't allowing me to get on the internet late last night. I was getting on there to check to see what things we got going on, what news, what boxing news, what MMA news are out there for the world to know about. And I think I got it done, but it was like at 2, 3 in the morning, man. I had to get this done in order to be prepared for us for our show today. We got Yuri Foreman coming through, who's got his upcoming fight on when is that fight happening? I believe it's in June 6th with Miguel Cotto at the Yankee Stadium, Bronx, New York. We got him calling through to talk to us a little bit about his mind frame right now and stepping in with a, I don't know whether if you could consider Miguel Cotto at his best anymore. Chris, what do you think?
Funny you asked that, because just the other day, I think it was yesterday actually, I was rewatching Manny Pacquiao versus Miguel Cotto, and looking at him in the corner in between rounds as the fight went on, especially towards the end, I really just thought to myself that Miguel Cotto is never going to be the same fighter. Physically, I mean, aside from the Margarito fight, he really had something taken out of him, and mentally. I mean, there were times in that Pacquiao fight where it looked like he wanted his corner to stop it, but the trainer didn't want to, and I just think that he really left a piece of himself in the ring that night.
Absolutely. I think so, too, you know, and some would even argue with you that he left a piece of himself with Antonio Margarito. You know, he was never, ever the same after that fight that when they stepped in and faced each other. But, you know, let's see. It's an interesting fight. I know that before Miguel Cotto was even put into the picture, there was some talk about Manny Pacquiao getting in with Yuri Foreman, and Yuri Foreman having a great successful night against Daniel Santos, who had Daniel Santos had been MIA for quite some time getting in the ring. And I think a lot of people were expecting Daniel Santos, including myself, to give Yuri Foreman his first defeat, but it didn't happen like that. Yuri looked fantastic. He even rocked Daniel Santos a few times, and he kept his O unblemished.
Yeah, I know Santos was seen as his toughest test. Actually, Santos, he's been so inactive, but he had been looking pretty good as of late, but Yuri pretty much just shut him out in that fight. And I don't know if it's Santos made some complaints afterwards with training and, you know, such and such as most fighters do, but, you know, you got to give Yuri credit. He went in there and pretty much took him out pretty easily and established himself as one of the best guys in that division.
Well, he can go back and he can say any excuse that he wants, Daniel Santos, you know, about the whole training camp, you know, was not intact for him. But the point is that he had a live fighter right there in front of him by the name of Yuri Foreman. And Yuri Foreman definitely was there to give him a fight. And that's exactly what Daniel Santos got out of Yuri Foreman, which I was very, very impressed by his performance. But, you know, it's the way it goes. Some people are going to say Daniel Santos was not in his right head at the time, and then you're going to have hardcore fight fans that said, nah, you know what? It was Yuri Foreman's night.
Either way, I think that based on their last performances and just the way they looked, I would definitely assume that Yuri Foreman is the favorite in most people's eyes going into this fight.
Well, like I mentioned before, it's scheduled, and Yuri Foreman is scheduled to face Miguel Cotto June 6th at the Yankee Stadium, Bronx, New York. 28-0 with 8 KOs. Okay, Yuri Foreman, I believe got you on the line, brother.
I'm here. Thank you very much for having me on your show.
Hey, thank you for coming through.
Your comments.
Wait, Yuri, thank you very much for coming on, leaving in the ring, and talk to us a little bit about your upcoming fight with the Puerto Rican star Miguel Cotto. Now, let me ask you this, Yuri. obviously, I'm pretty sure you have to be aware you're not getting the prime Miguel Cotto. You're really getting a Miguel Cotto that Top Rank's trying to find out how much is left of him stepping in with you, right?
Perhaps, you know, for me is I'm not looking at this right that way. You know, I'm getting ready for best Miguel Cotto, and that's what I expect from him. So I'm coming prepared. You know, I'm gonna do my homework and just see what's out there.
Let me ask you this: what are some of the concerns that you are looking at with Miguel Cotto? I mean, Miguel has stressed in the past that he's had problems staying at 147. You know, he's big frame, big back, big shoulders. Are you expecting a refreshed Miguel Cotto coming in there with you?
I don't know. You know, I don't know. I expect him being and. Top of his condition and his form and abilities. That's what I'm gonna get ready for. In terms of, you know, his frame, you know, he's a big guy. I had a chance to meet him a couple months ago in Madison Square Garden, and he's a nice fellow. And he's not a small guy, neither. So.
No, he's not a small guy. No, I agree with you. He's not a small guy, and that's why I'm wondering that maybe if that 147 division was. Maybe dehydrate him a little bit too much, not allowing him. Like back when Tito Trinity was fighting, you know, him being knocked down early in the rounds at 147 obviously showed that when he moved up in weight, it made him a little stronger. Now, Yori, let me ask you this, because you got a good record. I got to say, you fought pretty tough guys out there. You know, it's not like you're just all of a sudden walking into this ring unknown. You know, if you've been in there with the K-9 Bungerage, which you had an accidental headbutt. It was stopped back in 2009. You've also been in – you've decisioned over Jesus Soto Carras, who had similarities to Antonio Margarito. So you've been in this with some world-class fighters. Now – being that it's going to be in the Bronx, New York, and it's pretty much going to be Puerto Rico that day in the Yankee Stadium, how much pressure is that for you?
You know what, I I don't know how much, I don't know yet. You know, I'm getting prepared. I'm going to prepare mentally for it and, of course, physically for the fight. But, of course, I'm going to be aware. Not something I'm going to walk into Bronx, Yankee Stadium, and suddenly be surprised there's a chance people are going to boo, you know. So I'm gonna definitely ready for this. You know, it's also being a professional. You know, you're coming to the stage, you're coming to the ring, and you have to perform. You know, people could boo and everything as long as they're not coming to the ring, they're staying away and watching. It's all good by me, you know. So it's fine. There has been many examples of great champions going to somebody's backyard and or being in their backyard and booed, you know, and they performing well and winning, you know. So there's a lot of examples to look at. So it's normal.
Right. Exactly. Well, yeah. You know, I mean, it's obviously
part of the sport, you know.
Yeah, it's part of the business, you would have to say. You know, you're gonna win fans, and then you're not going to gain some fans, unfortunately, because you're going to be stepping in what a lot of people consider one of the best Puerto Rican fighters to date right now. Jordy, let me ask you, at 154, how is that weight comfortable with you? I mean, are you making that weight comfortable, or could this possibly be your last at 154?
No, I work a lot. I'm staying in the gym. I don't have no weight problems. You know, I walk around not more than 164, 165. So I feel comfortable, and I'm making 154. It's not a problem. You know, I feel good at it, and I feel strong, and that's my weight. I don't feel like that's it. I can't wait. I have to move to 160 or something. So. I feel still comfortable.
No, you know, Yori, your KO ratio is not that high. It's, you know, 8 KOs. And so a lot of fighters may overlook that. And seeing that what happened with Daniel Santos, you do possess power in those hands. Now, saying that already, being that this is going to be a big stage for you, being at the Yankee Stadium facing Miguel Cotto, do you feel a little pressure that you're going to have to bring your best game in order to continue to get into the mainstream, to the fight fans?
I mean, definitely, you know, I'm not sure. I'll definitely agree with you that I have to bring my A game. But in terms of feeling pressure, if I'm going to have this A game for this night, June 5th,
right.
I'm always come to fights with in good condition and in shape, and I'm just going to do and try to execute my game plan, whatever my coach Joe Greer going to come with it.
Mm-hmm.
And just go according to the screenplay.
Interesting fight. I got to say, Chris, what do you think? I mean, this is an interesting fight. Miguel Cotto moving up to 154 and not taking a walk in the park champion. This Yuri Foreman is obviously a dangerous, dangerous opponent in styles and in size.
Yes, it is. And actually, you know, Yuri, I'm kind of curious. This is probably going to be by far not only the biggest fight of your career, but the most publicized, the highest notoriety. Do you look at this fight as almost a coming out party for, you know, all the hardcore boxing fans? I'm sure know Yuri Foreman by now, but you know, in the mainstream, your name is not as big as a Miguel Cotto, for example. Do you see this fight as an opportunity to really get yourself out there?
Of course. I don't look as just one, you know, something happened that fall upon me. You know, I felt like I've been working hard for this fight, and it's also a historic event. You know, it's a first. It's a new Yankee Stadium, you know, and it's in first fight, which is I'm going to be one of the main event, you know, and it's also a new millennium, so it's a historical fight, and that's it's a great opportunity, of course, for me to showcase my skills and to show the world what I can do, and there's going to be a lot of people watching, so I'll God willing, I'm going to perform well.
Now, the fact is that this fight is supposed to take place in the new Yankee Stadium. Back in the day, when boxing was really, really popular, it would take place in big stadiums like that, but it hasn't been so in a while until the upcoming Manny Pacquiao-Claudio fight and your fight, of course, now. Is that something that you ever pictured? Did you ever picture yourself fighting in a big stadium like that? And do you think you'll be at all any more nervous coming to the fight?
Before, I was just reading books about it, you know, fighting in the big stadiums, you know, like Jack Dempsey, Joe Louis, you know, and actually interesting to note, you know, the first fight I ever held in old Yankee Stadium was the Benny Leonard, was a Jewish fighter, you know, so I'm starting the tradition in the new Yankee Stadium, you know, so I think it's good. Of course, I'm not trying to fill Benny Leonard's shoes, but definitely good, and of course I never would dream about the fight actually in the Yankee Stadium. You know, before there were talks about fighting in Madison Square Garden, I was like, wow. You know, I was just like working 10 years ago when I came here, and I was working as delivery boy in garment district. You know, trying to make a living, and now like years later, I'm going to be headlining in Madison Square Garden, but then it's got Yankee Stadium, and I was like, wow.
Right.
Not my expectation.
Right. Now, boxing is a very diverse sport. That's one of the things I think that makes it so popular worldwide, is there's so many different cultures represented. You live in a city where it's probably one of the most diverse cities in the world, New York. Is that something, you know, being as you're fighting your second Puerto Rican fighter in a row, where it's something that the fight you feel it's more, I don't want to say it's bad, because there are rivalries as far as like Mexico and Puerto Rico and other rivalries, but do you feel like, is there more talk of that in New York, you know, when you have a fighter such as yourself fighting a Puerto Rican fighter amongst the fans?
No, I think, you know, this talk is not really belongs in New York City, where it's like a city of nations, you know. It's first of all, in boxing, you know, for boxing, for me personally, I don't really look at the race or where he comes from. You know, boxing for me, it's opposite in the ring is going to be a boxer, my opponent. You know, so I don't really look. He's a Puerto Rican Mexican. I couldn't care less. You know, for me, it's just sport, and that's also was the reason. You know, point when I was in Israel, I was training with the Arab kids, you know, and I never look at them as Arabs or my enemies, God forbid, you know, I mean, I feel like boxing, it transcends those challenges, you know, those differences, I'm sorry.
Do you think that boxing is a platform just as far as the public? You know, you're out there a lot more than the average person. A lot more people know who you are. Do you think it's a chance where you get to really represent your race and your heritage and just be able to put a positive spin on things and show, like you said, that, you know, different cultures can get along?
Yeah, of course. And perhaps you're right. You know, I might have this opportunity. And, of course, it's a lot of responsibility that comes with it, you know.
Right.
A lot of young kids watching.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I must say this. I do think that you're a very positive role model for fans to look up to. One more thing about Miguel Cotto. I'm curious, have you gone back and, if so, watched the Manny Pacquiao fight against him? And what did you think about his demeanor later on in the fight, especially in the corner? Because as I was talking before you got on, he just really looked like he was spent. He looked like he was mentally defeated in there. Did you see that at all?
It's hard to see, with, especially, you know, his poker face, you know, you don't see much emotions in his face, and which is a good tool to have in boxing ring. Manny Pacquiao is such a great fighter, probably perhaps the best fighter of this decade, and, you know, it was just magnificent, you know, and Cotto really showed a great skills and lots of hardness, but, and I was watching this fight, and I was very happy to be participating in it, or in this same card. But back to the question. Yeah, I seen a little bit of, you know, a little lost, didn't feel like, how'd you call it? A little confusion in his face, I think.
I completely agree with you on that. One last question. Is there any other, after this Miguel Cotto fight, is there any names out there, anyone in particular, that you would really like to fight? Just an opponent that you think that you'd match up with well, or just someone out there that's in your division or a middleweight that really is almost like a dream fight for you? Is there anyone like that out there for you?
You know what? Right now it's a dream fight. It's Miguel Cotto. I always and never look past anybody who I fight. But as a if I have to throw a name, it's going to be a TBA. The all-powerful, fearless TBA.
That's a great name. That guy seems to always never run out of opponents. So
I know. Good.
Go ahead,
Yeah. TBA is to be announced.
Yeah. And I heard he packs a pretty good punch, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me see if my other co-host is on the line. Do I got Dave Chen? Or is it Strikeheart?
You got Strikeheart.
Strikeheart, go away, brother. Go ahead and start asking a question to Yori for me, brother.
Sure. First question I have for you is a bit of a fun question, just something I was curious about myself. You have a pretty nice-looking T-shirt for sale on your website, YoriForman.com. What exactly are the characters below? What do they spell out? I'm assuming they're Hebrew characters. What does it say?
You know, your guess was actually a mistake. It was actually Russian characters.
Okay.
It's Cyrillic letters, and they spell Brooklyn.
Okay.
Oh,
that's
wow.
Pretty cool. A little trivial fact. I was just curious myself. It's a nice looking T-shirt. Now moving on a little to something a little bit more serious. You like we've mentioned, and everybody knows, your next opponent is Miguel Cotto. Like Dave, my co-host mentioned, you only have 8 KOs on your record. Is there anything you're worried about in regards to winning on the scorecard with such a big star in Miguel Cotto?
I mean, that's always a challenge, you know. I'm aware of my power, though, and perhaps the last fight showed a little bit of it. And, you know, it's perhaps, you know, and I don't want to say, I mean, but perhaps, you know, the low percentage of knockouts is also shows the perhaps the quality of opponents that you had, you know. So the more competition, perhaps less knockouts, you know. If you fight maybe just tomato cans, you know, perhaps my record, my KO ratio would be higher, but never know, you know. So I feel strong. I do conditioning work, and my trainers who hold me on the pads or everything else, they say that I have a very good power. And we see in June 5th.
Okay. So with that being said, do you plan and to test Miguel Cotto early and see if you feel like you might be able to take him out, or are you going to be more cautious about it?
Interesting. Is he on the line?
Well, he's not, no.
I don't know yet. I'm going to meet with my coach, Joe Greer, next week, and we're going to basically, you know, work it out, what it's going to be, what it's going to look like, the battle plan.
Okay. Now here's a little bit in-depth more question for you. We already asked you if you felt like Cotto was a shot fighter. You said no. Now, you fought on his undercard for his judo fight and his Pacquiao fight. You saying that he's not shot, do you think that there is a difference in the Cotto that you saw on those two cards or not?
You know, besides, you know, Zab Judah is a great, he's a former world champion, he's a great fighter, and, but, you know, if I have to kind of analyze Cotto with Zab Judah and Cotto with Pacquiao, first of all, I have to realize also Cotto had completely two different opponents, you know, in class, you know, so I have to look at it, you know, to come up with an answer for this. So.
Okay.
But
that's fine. You mentioned just a couple minutes ago that you had trained in an Arab gym growing up as a kid. Was that a conscious choice you made, or was that just because that was the gym that was available to you where you were at in Israel?
That was the gym available, and it was conscious choice. Of course, not something I was passing by and decided to check them out, you know. But yeah, I wanted to be a boxer, and nobody like in my city there was no boxing gym, and the only gym that I heard of was actually an Arab gym about 20 miles away from city I live, and it's village, and they have like two rings, they have a bunch of bags and equipment, and I just was, 15 years old and made this trip. It was very interesting. It was a good experience.
Being that you say it was a good experience, exactly what was that experience like? It's an interesting story for sure.
It's something like Rocky III, you know, when Rocky Balboa brought by Apollo Creed to, I think, gym in Philadelphia, I believe.
Yes.
Or somewhere else. I don't remember. It was a long time since I seen this movie. And he was going to this boxing gym downstairs, like in the basement, and everybody was staring at him. You know, everybody stopped moving, stopped hitting the bag, and they look at him like, and they say, "You see, Rocky? See, they have all eye of a tiger." You know,
I remember that.
Similar to this, you know. I don't remember if everybody stopped hitting, but everybody definitely wanted to, maul you. Something.
That's a funny story,
but,
man.
No, but,
that's interesting.
But again, just like I said before, that boxing, princess, and all this differences crumble, I should say, you know. After good workout, good sparring, you know, we become friends. We became friends. I have many friends in this area, and interesting. I had a lot of support from after my last fight, you know.
Along those same lines, too, you know, not a lot of people may know, or maybe they do, that you're also a rabbi as well as a boxer.
Not yet. A rabbi.
Not
rabbi
yet. You're training. Okay. But
yeah.
How do you juggle those two things, and do they exist in the same world, or do you separate them?
No, it's coexist, you know. Boxing is a very physical sport. It's something and Judaism, religion, or any religion, Judaism in particular, is a spiritual sport. You know, we as a physical human beings, you know, we are in this world, in physical world, and in order, in Judaism is, you have to elevate physical world to the higher plane. You know, so it's, for me, it's kind of natural. You know, I go to the gym before, just like in school, you know, and after I study. So it does help. And Judaism helps me to be a better boxer, you know. And actually, boxing helps me to be a better student in rabbinic classes. It takes a lot of dedication and a lot of focus, you know. And you have to also think a lot, you know, during the subject I learned, for example.
So when you're in rabbinical school, are people surprised to find out that you're a boxer? Or is that something that is, like, your demeanor there?
Since everybody, I know them for years, they just not surprised. Yuri is a boxer, so I'm just expect maybe sometimes not they surprise when I'm coming with a very smart answer or something.
So when you do become a rabbi, do you plan on continuing to box, or at that point will your career be over?
The question is, when it comes, when I, God willing, become a rabbi, then we'll see.
Okay. I got one last question for you, and this one is about your wife, not you. Your wife, Leela, had made a documentary a few years back about the Women's Golden Glove Tournament. And I don't think very many people, unfortunately, have had the chance to see that yet. Can you tell us a little bit about that film and how people would be able to watch it?
Yeah, the movie is, first of all, it's a very good movie. she made this movie, Golden Gloves, and it's about female aspect of boxing. Amateur boxing, Golden Gloves.
Right.
And it shows basically the differences, you know, like, for example, if a male fighter would go anywhere, he would provide it with hotel and lunch money, and women in the same team would not get that. And she follows a very interesting characters. They're very very different, but very unique. One of them actually became world champion, Melissa Hernandez. And this movie is well directed and well shot and well edited, and great music too. And it could be seen actually on Netflix, the name been changed to million no the Lives of Million Dollar Baby.
Baby. Mm.
Yeah, babies.
Babies. gotta check that out.
Yeah.
Check it out.
I think I'm going to check it out too.
I definitely going to have to take a look at that. Yuri, I really appreciate you coming on, leaving in the ring. I got to say, your demeanor and the way you represent yourself is A-class, as well as your boxing skills.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
And I can't wait to have you on again. Before I let you go, though, can I get your prediction for Saturday night's fight? Miguel Cotto versus, Manny Pacquiao versus Joshua Calate. Who do you have on that fight?
Wow. You know what, if I have to choose, I'll choose Manny Pacquiao by unanimous decision.
Okay.
I just don't see him stopping Clady, and Clady is a great fighter. So actually, you know, you never know. Clady my surprises. We'll see.
Okay, brother. Well, we'll see what happens on that Saturday night. Hey, Yuri, thank you very much again, brother, for calling in and talking to us. And like I said, can't wait to have you on one more time.
Thank you very much, guys. I appreciate it for having me on the show.
All right, Yuri. Well, there you go. Yuri Foreman, who's scheduled to fight Miguel Cotto in June 6th at the Yankee Stadium, Bronx, New York. We got a I'm drinking this water, and it's just getting it caught and stuck in my throat here. Anyways, we got a real packed show today, like always. You know, we have some boxing news that we got to talk about. We got Frankie Gomez amateur fighter that turned pro that just got signed to Golden Boy. He's going to be calling in with us and discussing us a little bit about what's planned in the future for his career. He's going to be debuting on the undercard of Roy Jones versus Bernard Hopkins. This kid, too, also, he beat Jose Benavidez 4 times in the amateur. Being that the last 5 times they had faced each other, it was 11-9 scored, and this kid has a lot of promising. Frankie Gomez out of East Los Angeles. Funny thing, too, is that his birthday is the same day, you know, February 9th, I believe, with Oscar De La Hoya, who's his, now you got to say, is his boss.
It's his boss, and I think it might be his mentor, because they said that Gomez grew up in the same East Side, East LA, you know, where De La Hoya did. So I imagine
exactly.
He probably looked up to him, and, you know, to have your birthday on the same day, I mean, and to be able to sign with them, I mean, it's probably a dream come true for that kid.
Yeah, February 4th, that's the birthday. That's his. That's Frankie Gomez's birth date. And like you said, you know, they did grow up in the same barrio, East Los Angeles. And, you know, this kid, 18 years old, I believe, 2009 U.S. National Champion at 141 pounds. And like I mentioned before, we've had Jose Benavidez, who signed with Top Rank and is under the tutelage of Freddie Roach. He had scored some wins over Jose Benavidez. Is also in the same, I would have to say, in the same track of becoming a superstar in this beloved game that we like to call boxing. Strike Heart, brother, how are you doing, man? I haven't had a chance to say, ¿qué pasó?
I'm doing well. I've been trying to get a hold of Joshua Clady pretty feverishly all day, and I've come close a few times. But
Is he still sleeping?
Oh, I don't know. It's the last time I called right as the show was coming on to see if I could get him to call in. But I got his answering machine. So he may or may not still be sleeping. But he's changed his message. It's a lot more professional, so maybe that's
really?
The sign that he's about to become a superstar Saturday night.
Oh, man. I wonder how it sounds. I wonder how that's playing out for him. You know, obviously, this is the biggest fight of his career. And I would have to say the biggest purse that he's receiving out of all the fights that he's stepped in with. He's getting a pretty good check, you know, for Saturday night. So, yeah, changing that voicemail, making it more professional. It's got to be something. And you know, that kind of tells me, too, a little bit, Strike and Chris, that his mind frame may be changing a little bit. Maybe he's now not thinking of himself as walking in as an opponent. Maybe he's thinking of himself as walking away as a champion.
I would imagine he's got the confidence. But, yeah, you know, like Strike Hard said, maybe he's just trying to be a little bit more professional. And I'm sure he's getting a lot of contacts and people trying to get a hold of him this week or the past couple of weeks to talk about this fight. So let's just hope you don't forget about the little guys.
Don't forget about the little guys, man. That had you on a few times, brother. Anyways, this is your boy, 97 Ruff, on Leave It in the Ring. You can call in at 347-215-7598. The call-in number again is 347-215-7598. You know, going back real quick, I don't know if you guys, I don't know if all the fans and everybody else that's on the panel right now are aware of this, but we did release our first series of the T-shirts of the Will Be Blood. You can purchase it. Go to the willbebloodfightshow.com, and you can make your order. You can email leaveitintheRing@gmail.com and make a purchase on one of these shirts that we have right now on display. It's you know, really good material. You know, it's the fabric is high quality. We put a lot of money and a lot of time into this, you know, and the next set of shirts should be out in about another 2 weeks or so. And then the next set and then the next set, it'll keep continuously. We'll keep going at it and hopefully bringing the best boxing apparel and gear for fight fans to wear, you know, because I know myself, man, that sometimes I get kind of like, damn, man, I see like a Giants jersey or a shirt or a football jersey shirt or even the caps. We got hats coming out, too, where I always go like, man, I wish that they would bring something out a little bit more in my sport, you know, and that's exactly what we're trying to do. That first series that we got, There Will Be Blood, it's really a little dark. It's a little darker. It's more of a dark look to it, but I figured why not, you know, There Will Be Blood. And like I said, if you hadn't had a chance to look at it, we got the sombrero, skull wearing a sombrero, you know, and really, honestly, it doesn't cater just to Mexicans. cater to everybody because Cubanos, the Dominicans, and everybody else, you know, wears them as well, from Puerto Ricans and stuff. You know, they wear the same thing, the sombrero. So have a chance. Go look at it. Support Leave It in the Ring by purchasing it. You know, it's with taxes and shipping and handling. And like I said, good quality shirts. Really, really good fabric, man. It's what more could I say about it, Chris? I don't know. What else is there to say about that shirt?
You know, hey, support your guys, you know, support boxing. And, you know, like you said, it's a good shirt. I mean, even if I couldn't get hooked up with one, I was planning on buying one. But fortunately, I get that employee perk, so... But I'm looking forward to getting mine so I can, you know, support it in my videos and whatnot.
Exactly, you know, and I know some people are asking me about the PayPal. We are waiting. See, the whole thing about the PayPal, I know a lot of people don't like doing the PayPal because they're a little wary about doing stuff like that. So how we're setting it up is through, like, a direct account. I don't have all the details of it, so it's not even a bother for me to speak about it right now. But if you email... Right now, because I got to say this, and I'm not saying that, you know, for you to rush to buy a shirt, is that the shirts are going pretty fast. People have been ordering them, and we have displayed them here in my general area in some boxing gyms and MMA gyms. So they are going. So if you want to at least reserve your shirt, you can go ahead and do that at leaveitinaring@gmail.com, or you can even wait for the second set of shirts, because it's going to have a completely different look from the Will Be Blood. It's going to be a Leave It in the Ring radio show shirt. And then, like I said, it'll go on from there and there and there and stuff. But hey, even if you don't buy one, it doesn't matter. We appreciate your guys' support, everybody that calls in and, you know, chops it up with us, and send in your emails, and continue sending your emails too, your questions. We will get to it later on today in our mailbag, the questions that everybody has for either myself or for Chris or Strike Card or even Blood. I know my boy Blood has bought a house. A lot of people have been hitting me up asking me what happened with Blood. Did he quit the show? No, he ain't quit the show. It's just, unfortunately, life does catch up, and Blood has things that he has to take care of among his family and get himself situated. Just buying a new home is a big task within itself. So, anyways, my boy Blood is still out there. You know, me and Blood have came up together and doing this whole thing. From the YouTube and doing the radio. So big shout out to my boy Blood, my brother from another mother. And let's continue with this thing, the sport that we love, boxing, man. Let's talk a little bit about it. You know, this past Saturday, I was over in Palm Springs at the Agua Caliente to witness a hell of a fight between Victor Chinian going in with a kid that's being brought up by the Barreras, Guerrero. I got to say, man, I was sitting there and I was kind of witnessing a mirror a little bit of Julio Cesar Chavez Sr. and the way this kid was basically gobbling up shots. And really, I've never seen Vic backpedal so much in a fight. Strike?
Yeah, that was the big surprise. I thought we were in for a short night. But like you said, that kid can eat a big shot. It was a bit surprising to see Victor Chinian change gears like that, because it's not something we're really used to seeing. At the same time, though, he doesn't exactly look like the best fighter in the world when he's forced to do that. If I was him, maybe I would stop calling out Nonito Donaire's name so much.
You know what? I was thinking the same thing. I was thinking, you know what? You maybe might not want to be calling out Nonito, especially. This is the crazy part, okay? Because I was talking to Doug Fisher from RingTV.com, and the first thing I said is that, look, man, this kid, first off, walks in with only 11 fights, 9 KOs, 1 loss, 1 draw, okay? That already kind of tells you, like, why was he being put in with a world-class champion like Victor Chinian, a puncher, okay? It just makes you wonder, if they would have waited until this kid maybe had 20 fights, 25 fights, how good could he have been? Because going in with Victor Chinian, you got to wonder, even though he took some hellacious shots, and you got to say, the kid's got a jaw and a half, and he does bring urgency to his boxing skills, okay, because he picked it up after the 6th round. But you got to wonder how much of that fight took out of him, where if there was any sign of maybe being great, it's been taken out of him on that Saturday night, Chris.
You make a good point. You were there, so obviously you have the best perspective. And we're going to see what happens in Guerrero's next couple fights. But it's almost, you know, it kind of reminds me of when what's that dude's name? They fought a couple weeks ago. Valero fought DeMarco. And I thought maybe it was too much too soon. But, you know, DeMarco hung in there. Granted, this kid lasted longer than DeMarco did in his fight. I mean, than DeMarco did. But you're right. I mean, the kid took a beating, showed a tremendous heart. But long-term, it may not be the best for his career. And like you said, I just don't understand the matchup. I mean, with that few of fights, the kid couldn't have been ranked number one contender. So I'm not really for sure what that arrangement was in putting that fight together.
Well,
hopefully,
you know,
it's a learning experience.
This is what I got to... But this
is
what
I
got to
number three or something by one of the organizations. But yeah, I mean, it was a weird matchup for sure.
But you know what? But you know what, Strike? This is what I got to say about that. Whoever was the matchmaker of this, okay, is ha ha to you, because you know what? Really, honestly, this kid was put in there to patent Vic Dartanian's record. He was in there to make sure that it was some security that Vic was going to be able to pass this kid so they could secure the bout between a rematch with Nornito Dornier. And I got to tell you what, that whoever did that matchmaking, whoever decided to put those two together, was really honestly probably standing in his own puddle of piss, because you know he was worried about that fight, because the kid did rock him. I believe it was either like the ninth or tenth round. He had Vic, you know, covering up, ear muffing, and this kid was just wailing away at him. And I gotta say, I was really, really impressed by Guerrero, but at the same time, I was like, man, why did they put him in so early with Vic Dartanian? And I seen that kid right after the fight, and he had the big gash, and like I said, you know, but the person that had the beat face was Vic Dartanian. I seen him right after too at a restaurant we went to go eat, me and Red and Art, and I walk up right to Vic and I said, hey Vic, best fight I've seen you in. Did you think this kid was going to be able to take your shots like that? He looked at me, man, and he put his hands up in his air, and he showed me his hands like, I can't. It was pretty much like he was kind of signifying that I don't know what else that I was able to hit that kid with, because he just wouldn't go down.
Uh-huh. And I think that this loss is probably going to do better for Guerrero than having not fought this fight. I think that he's probably gotten his name out there pretty well by losing to Vic Dartanian.
Oh, yeah.
But
definitely.
Not getting knocked out. Yeah, I mean, he should probably see another good fight come his way after that.
You know what? Either that or what's going to happen, you're never going to see this kid ever again, because anybody, and if anyone really honestly witnessed that fight, you have to think about, wow, not only can this kid take a punch, but he can come at you. And he did. He worked that body of Vic Dartanian. Vic did not like them body shots. And really, in all honesty, the way the kid threw those body shots, he reminded me a little bit of Marco Antonio Barrera. And I got to say, you know, I keep going back and forth with this, is that how much did that fight take out of that poor kid? Because even if he does get another big payday, or I don't even know if it was a big payday for him, seeing that he didn't have a market name or any leverage with his name at this moment. But he's definitely got to have some leverage now, you know, going in with anybody else. But in all honesty, who wants to fight a kid that could basically make it look like you have pillows in your punches? I don't know. Chris?
Well, hopefully Showbox, since that was a Showbox show, Showtime's known to foster young prospects, and they always bring back a lot of these young guys that put on good performances, so hopefully Showtime will give him a call again, because I definitely think he earned another fight. And they can match him up with another young prospect, you know, not with a world champion. Let him get in there with a guy at the same level he's at. So, you know, that's what I want. But, you know, before we move on too far, I want to hear your thoughts on that the undercard fight, that Angulo fight.
I was going to bring that up. I was going to say, you know, the funny thing is I'm sitting there and I'm scoring that fight. And you know what? I don't have the scores that I put, but I do have the scorecards that Terry Cantu and Glenn Hamada and Johnny Davis did, okay? And Angulo won that fight. Let's be honest. He won that fight. I don't know what fight they were watching. Lenny, yeah, did he show heart? But the kid looked out of his place. Angulo was able to time him and counter him and do whatever he wanted. And both these 14-13 by Johnny Davis. Okay, all right, well, we can argue with that, 14-13, but from 16-111, 16-111, both of these guys. And this is the funny part is that on the part where they did deduct a point from him, I'm looking at scorecards right here. Look, you hear that? I'm looking at a scorecard right here. Okay, because they gave us the scorecards. And I'm looking at this on the, what is it, the, what was one, two, this is the ninth round, deducted a point from Angulo, right? Well, why wasn't that scored a 9-9 round? It was scored, and this is the funny part, it was scored 9 for Lenny and 10 for Angulo. Does that make any sense, Strike?
It doesn't sound like it makes sense, and I'll have to say right now, I haven't had a chance to catch up on that one. I had, like, TiVo'd the HBO card that night, the Urango Alexander, and by the time I had finished that, it was the Darchinian fight was just getting started. So I haven't seen it, but that doesn't sound right to me, that's for sure.
That does. I mean, if the guy, even if Angulo, yeah, he won that round, but there was a point deducted. There was a point deducted. What was 11? There is no 11. You don't put an 11 score on a scorecard for a fighter. You know, a point was deducted, so it should have been 9. And the other kid, Lenny, lost that round, so it should be 9-9. It should be an even round, okay? Or even if the kid got dropped, or it could be an 8-9 round. But you don't put – you don't – my point is this, is that you see this mistake that they did here that obviously tells you they don't know what the hell they're doing. So how in the hell are these guys scoring fights? How are they scoring fights? I want to know. I don't understand this. I wish we can get two of these judges on the radio show because I'd like them to walk through this fight. Maybe even we'll even put it on Ustream and we could sit there together with no volume and see how did you score that fight because I don't get it. I still believe Angulo walked away as a champion just like the people that attend the fight at Aguascalientes. They believed he won that fight easily. Not the way these judges had it or the way they saw it. It was ridiculous, but it wouldn't be a night of boxing without having a ridiculous scorecard from the judges. You know what
yeah.
I'm saying? And Kid Guerrero, I have to applaud him and bow down to the kid. And Vic, even Vic, I got to bow down to Vic because I was really out of it. I was like, oh, man, you got to be kidding me, man. They stole this from this kid, Angulo, and they made it up for me. They just made it up. You know when you have a bad breakup and then the old lady goes and puts on the lingerie and comes and just surprises you? That's pretty much what it was for me. You know what I mean? And it was a complete makeup for me. You know, I heard that song, Make Up, Break Up, you know, that oldie but goodie in the back of my head. Anyway, man, this is your boy 97 Ruff. I think I'm done with my rant. I was pissed off about that decision. It was ridiculous. I don't understand those three the judges that these guys they supposedly have a set of eyes, but they just don't know how to use them. Hopefully they're not driving. I hope they don't have driver license. I really don't. I really hope they don't, you know, because I don't even know how these guys tie their shoes, to tell you the truth. But anyways, man, we got our next guest coming through, and before we get them on, I know I need to go take a break. We'll Strike and Chris and everybody else, if you want to call in, 347-215-7598. It's your boy 97 Ruff. We'll be right back, man, from these short – well, it's not going to be short. You know how our breaks are. We got to put it in, brothers. Put it in.
You're listening to Lead in the Ring. You're listening to Lead in the Ring.
Come on. But they don't hear me though. But they don't hear me though. But they don't. I got blood on my hands and there's no remorse. Cause I fucked the boss, I'm a nasty nigga. When you pass me, nigga, look me in my eyes. Tell me to my fucking face that you ready to die. You be a dead motherfucker, red motherfucker. Don't be stupid, you heard what I said, motherfucker. Who shot you? Oh, nigga, like you don't know. Staking you for your dough while I'm fucking your broke home. Yo, won't you get the picture? Niggas can't touch me. Cause I don't give a fuck, G, I get you touch me. I got joints that with my slug will take apart a door. And enough crazy niggas behind me to start a war. So what you want, nigga, help is you's about to rest. When I'm fed, Red Cross couldn't clean up the mess. And the best will do nothing but make you look a little better. Cause
in the dark, you ain't nothing but a low nigga. And if you been thinking about that shit you did, you would have bought the joint with you, kid. Now I'ma have to get you, kid, and split your wig with a machete. I bring beef to niggas and string them out like spaghetti. You ain't ready, nor can you stand how I'm bringing it. How I'm giving it is how I'm living it, so I'm swinging it. Red dot on your head, cause you just did rage. Red dot on your chest, opens up your rib cage. I just
love when a nigga bring his whole crew. It's just a bigger piece of cake for me to chew a whole through. I just love when a nigga bring his whole crew.
Cause you is a bitch and always been a bitch. And you know how niggas do a bitch, you run up in a bitch. Put something in a bitch. Nigga, do you know me? Nigga, do you owe me? Niggas, you can blow me? Well, I'ma let this trigger do you, homie. That nigga's got to be smoking something, thinking you joking something. Fucking around with me, you'll be a broke something. I'm off of blood with the crypt of war. How much shit could you talk with your lips on the floor? Well, see, niggas make me bitch, so I scratch you a bitch. So I snap your girl face, they get pissed off. Scratch me. Yeah, there was a time when I would've took up the toughest shit. Now I'm on some shit like, yo, smoke this nigga. I'm about to find out how much debt you got before I spill them. Somebody come and get this motherfucker before I kill him. Ah, fresh out the asylum, I'm wildin'. Yeah, niggas know the phone numbers to help, you best to dial them. 911, emergency, the urgency. We'll have witnesses seeing what the surgeon see. How far you gon' get with your dumb split, fool? And get your man slippin' cause he think your shit cool. But it ain't, so I paint the walls with his blood. Another dick in the mud, nigga, what?
Drop, I drop heavy. Twist the metal, mask and machete. The car don't want beef, he want veggie. Plus signs over deadly metal. Who got him gassed on his own Getty? Battery back, he ever ready. Now what's fucking with that, huh? Not you, you chuck ya. I fuck with beef nut. Living la vida loca, callete la boca. See the Spanish fly on the sofa. One word, he slapped you with the toast guy. Keep it in the holster on safety. Put yourself in timeout. Playing with this dough, let me find out. You ain't hard to find, though. Barrel on your tonsils. She got a fly, no, she got my mind, though.
But I'll leave it in the ring. MC, but stand and fight. And when this bell goes ding, this is a real show and this is true radio. Got something to say, well then call in, yo. There will be blood, but I'll leave it in the ring. So you better stand and fight. And when this bell goes ding, this is a real show and this is true radio. Got something to say, well then call in, yo. If destiny is written, then I'm set for what the stage is. The bullshit that is written by the critics in the papers. How the cynics think they can lie on me. I'm ready on my feet for round four, you see. I'm ready, so ready, I train properly. So fit, this is the key along with natural boxing skill. The knowledge is all here, so let's stand and fight. And will the crowd obeying for blood? I'm blessed in the ring, but I can fight like a bug. The temperature's 97, it's rough. The heat, 6 feet for you, is making it tough. I'm shocked, surprised that you made it to five. I'm shocked, surprised that you made it to five. You've got the balls, but no skills to survive. You've got the balls, but no skills to survive. You're in a sport that could end your life, that could end your life. There will be blood, but I'll leave it in the ring. So you better stand and fight. And when this bell goes ding, this is a real show and this is true radio. Got something to say, well then call in, yo. There will be blood, but I'll leave it in the ring. So you better stand and fight. And when this bell goes ding, this is a real show and this is true radio.
Man, that was courtesy of a listener, a homeboy of ours, actually a really guy that follow us all the way down and is a huge supporter, Tilby, that just did a song for us, Leave It in the Ring. What you guys think, man? Chris, what you think, brother? I was digging it. I was digging it, dog.
Yeah, no, I've been listening to it. He sent it to me on an email, and I've been listening to it. Yeah, it's good stuff, man. He put a lot of time and work into it, so shouts out to Tilby. He's usually in the chat room. He was in there earlier. Where you at, man?
I know, man. Where is Tilby? I know Strike hit me up and said, yo, we need to put that beat, that cut up on the radio show. And I was like, yeah, you know what? I'm going to do it today, matter of fact. You know, perfect timing. And I got to say, man, that beat is hard. I like that beat. Nice, nice beat, man. And yeah, I appreciate Tilby for you sending that song over to us on Leave It in the Ring. You know, greatly appreciate it. And like I said, man, definitely love the support from all the everybody that listens to us, from the ones that hate us to love us. Doesn't matter, man. The support is always equal. So anyways, say going back real quick, before we get Frankie Gomez on the line with us on Leave It in the Ring, got to make a quick reminder that before we forget about the Devon Alexander the Great having a sensational win over Juan Urango. Who saw that coming? That kind of came out of left field, in my opinion. Strike?
Yeah, I didn't see that particular end coming about at all. No, I thought that we were going to see, Devon Alexander be a bit more cautious, you know, being in there with a big puncher. But no, he marched right forward at him a lot of the fight. I mean, he did box a little bit, but he was ready to trade punches more than I expected that he would be. He ate some hooks along the way, but ultimately he was the one that got the knockout. You know, before the fight, you would have probably said anybody that I remember talking to, you know, they got Alexander 90% sure that he'll win the decision, but maybe Urango can knock him out at some point. Who would have guessed?
And you know, the funny thing is that that knockout came along by being set up off of his jab, and very impressive. In the beginning, when the name Alexander was being mentioned as a possible opponent for Timothy Bradley, I had thought, a little too early for him right now. I'd like to see him keep, you know, going at it. But seeing his performance with Juan Urango, and really honestly, Juan Urango, you can't sit here and say he was a great fighter. He was just a durable guy. You know, the Iron Twin is one of those guys, big, thick neck, big shoulder, big guy. He went all 12 rounds with Andre Berto. And going in with Alexander, you have to, you know, I hate to do this, but you have to throw up a little bit how much of him was still around in that fight. You know, how much of him was still, you could really possibly say that Alexander got the best of Juan Urango. I know some fight fans. Go ahead.
I think he did. I mean, and I think the knockout that Alexander just scored was a big, big deal because, you know, in Urango's last fight, he took Randall Bailey's best punch. And that's a guy who's basically known for his best punch. Randall Bailey is a knockout puncher. That's what he's known for. And for you to be able to recover from a knockout punch that you got from Randall Bailey, but not recover from a punch you got from Devon Alexander, that says a lot about the power you have in your hands. I don't think anybody really knew that Devin Alexander could do that. I certainly didn't.
Then immediately after, Zab Judah jumps into the ring, you know, trying to make himself make his presence known to Alexander, you know, possibly trying to get himself in the mix and not Timothy Bradley. I did speak to Timothy, though, yesterday. I didn't have a chance today to get a soundbite of him talking about Alexander, but he said that he's more than willing to come on the show if Alexander decides to come on and leave it in the ring. So we're trying to set that up. But let me get some Fight Fans' opinion about this Saturday past fights. Okay, let's go with area code 215. Area code 215. State your name, where you calling from, brother, and what's on your mind.
Bro, what's up, my dude? This is Coltrane from Guard to Go Boxing.
Coltrane, what's up, brother? How you doing, man?
Oh, man, it's a pleasure, man. Always a pleasure, man. Shout out to 91 and my dude Strikeheart, man. It's a pleasure to get to talk to them in person as well.
Hey, what's up, Coltrane? How's it going?
Nothing much, man. Just like everybody else, you know, waiting for Saturday night, man.
Waiting for Saturday night, man. Well, hey, Coltrane, let me ask you this real quick before, you know, we roll into the other stuff. So who you got, brother? You got Pacquiao, or you got, you're hoping that the Grandmaster has a master plan stepping in the ring with Manny Pacquiao?
You know what's funny, Ralph, 97, Ralph, we actually had a chance to interview Joshua Clady about last year, probably around this time, maybe 2 years ago in the fall, actually, at the Steve Cunningham fight, and he was a really nice guy. You know, at that time, he wasn't really getting any big fights, and, you know, you all know he ended up getting a Cotto fight, but kind of like in a Margarito fight, he didn't kind of, you know, press the issue like he should have. You know, here it is, 2010. He got the chance of a lifetime. You know, I call it the big lottery ticket. You know, all he has to do is, you know, pretty much go and cash it in. But unfortunately, I don't see it happening, man. I just think that, you know, the style that beats Manny Pacquiao has to be an offensive style like him. You know, so not so much like his, but you have to be offensive-minded. I just don't think a earmuff, peekaboo-style defense can beat Manny Pacquiao offensive attack, man. I just don't see it happen. Not to mention him going to the scorecards either, which is a whole other subject.
It's another subject, and it's a subject, honestly, that has stamped the minds of a lot of hardcore fight fans, saying that if it goes to the scorecards, then definitely you're not going to see the trading of the hands and belts between Manny Pacquiao versus Joshua Calati if Joshua Calati is successful in countering and pushing them back. But, you know, brother, this is the thing that I was thinking about, and I've replayed this fight, when you sit back and you just think about it, you know what I mean? And literally you start drawing and you're sketching and, you know, you're going through motions and you're thinking like, okay, if there was a possible way for Joshua the Calati to beat Manny Pacquiao, and at one time, this is the ironic thing, at one time, Joshua, the Grandmaster, was considered the most avoided 147-pound fighter in the world.
Right, exactly.
Now
you're right.
Now he's being looked at as the most, not least dangerous 147 pounder in that division at that moment. Isn't that kind of weird, man? That to me baffles me and it makes me like, wait a minute. Are we not the ones? Are we as fight fans not the ones that said this is the most avoided man at 147? Now it's literally like we've shut the book on this guy.
I don't think it's so much shut the book. I just think that if I had to describe it, I would just think passive aggression we've seen from Clady. I just can't erase the fact that he had a wounded animal in front of him in Miguel Cotto and didn't go for the kill. I just think that and Saturday I could be proven wrong about this, but I just think that some guys, you know how some guys don't have that it, and this is no knock, you know, because some guys just don't have that it factor. I think Manny Pacquiao has it. I think Shane Mosley had it. I think Antonio Margarito had it. Chavez, you know, the list goes on of different fighters that had that it. I just think Clady, even when you listen to him talk in some of these interviews, if there's a complacency factor there. He's like, if I lose, you know, it's a bunch of ifs going on. Like, it's almost as if he's setting himself up to lose. Like, I'm going to give him his toughest fight, even if I lose. I don't know if I want to hear that coming out of a guy that's, you know, that was opened up as a, 4-1, 5-1 underdog. I want to hear, I'm going to kick his ass. And I'm not saying he has to be that brash about it, and pardon my French, I don't, you know. But I just want to hear that aggressiveness in him. And I just didn't see it. You're right, before that he was dubbed as the most feared, yada, yada. And we even said that to him when we interviewed him. But since that, since you know, he was been dubbed as that, he had chances to prove it. and change everyone's opinion. I think Saturday night, if he doesn't change that perception of him, then he's just going to be known as an opponent and not as a great fighter after Saturday night.
You know, I was asked this at the Agua Caliente Casino, what my thoughts and my opinion when on Joshua Kalani. I said, this is what I had to say about it. And it's really honestly, and no disrespect to him, I'm a fan of Joshua. I love the way Joshua comes and brings it. You know, he has that rich history of Ghana Warriors, you know, from Azuma Nelson and even Ike Corte. But this is the problem, you know, and for some reason, I'm calling it the Azuma Nelson curse. Because Azuma's the last of those warriors that really honestly had a different gear. They were able to turn it up when they were in trouble. They were able to switch, you know what I mean, and come forward and mix it up and show urgency in their arsenal. Where Ike Corte is a perfect example. He did not have that urgency in his blood. Same thing with Abeko. You know, Abeko going in with Yanni Perez. He did not have that urgency.
Good point.
Joshua Kalani, now you can put him in that if he doesn't. If he doesn't step it up Saturday night. Now, this is how I describe Joshua Kalani. I said, you know, you remember those old school 45 records? You remember those?
Yeah, I remember
okay.
those.
Okay, you remember the B-side?
Taking me back, but I remember.
Yeah. You remember that? Okay. You remember the B-side. And a lot of the times, the B-side was the fill-up. It was the fill-up on the record. It was like, okay, we got the hit record on the A-side, but let's fill it up with something else. So just throw on whatever on the B-side. And in my opinion, that's exactly what Joshua Kalani is right now. He's the fill-up. He's that one name that you fill it. You kind of fill it up in the roster of 147-pounders at the moment. That's the only way I can describe him. I may be wrong, you know, and I know when I'm wrong, I'm gonna get like over 100 emails on how wrong I was.
you know, I know all about that. So you know, that comes with the gig, unfortunately. You know,
absolutely.
But that's a good analogy. That's a good analogy, and that's the way I kind of look at it. It's them just, you know, Rada Da. I'm gonna just borrow a quote from Rada Da. What he said. He said Joshua Kalani is a commercial break. He called them a commercial break for fighting. And I hate to it sounds like a diss, but it's not. But it's just that. And again, he has a chance to reverse history on Saturday.
He does.
You know, he beats, you know what I mean?
I mean, there's something to be said that like an aggressive offensive mind, you know, fight style isn't exactly the best way to fight Manny Pacquiao, because anytime you see somebody go toe-to-toe and trade with Manny Pacquiao, that's their biggest mistake. I mean, if you go back and look at the Marquez fight, the second one, Marquez's best moments came when he thought first. So I don't think Kalani is going to be setting himself up to do very well on the scorecards, but he could surprise everybody and get Manny Pacquiao in big trouble using his head.
Exactly.
And I don't mean the headbutts. I mean the thinking.
Exactly. And you know what? I got to chime in, our next guest, Coltrane, stay on the line, brother. You know,
I'm right here, my dude.
All right, brother. I got to chime in my next guest right now. And Frankie Gomez is going to be making his pro debut April 3rd at Mandalay Bay on the undercard of Hopkins and Roy Jones bout. The anticipated fight between the two rival guys, Hopkins and Roy Jones. We have the 18-year-old from East Los Angeles, the AIBA World Boxing Champion, he won the title in Italy, and he was able to meet Marvelous Marvin Hagler. Hey, Frank, you on the line, brother?
Yes.
What's going on, brother? How you doing, man? How's training camp going for you right now?
Training's going very well. Hard training. Everything's going good.
So, Frankie, you know, the boy walks over and puts his arm around you and says, hey, let's go talk a deal. How did that go about, man? How did that happen?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Can you repeat the question, David? This is Coach Ibarra.
Yeah, how are you doing there, Ibarra? My question was, so when Oscar De La Hoya or Golden Boy come around and say, you know, let's talk business here. How did they come about that? I mean, did they come down to the gym, or did they go down to one of the matches and maybe was waiting in the waiting room, dressing room?
Hey, Dave, yeah, what happened was word started swirling around that he was considering going pro. And then what happened was Oscar showed up to one of our sparring sessions, and he got to see Frankie spar, and I think he really liked what he saw.
So when you see Oscar come down to the gym, and Frankie, I'd like to get your feelings about this. Was it a normal day, or was it, hey, I got to show the goods here because they're coming to see whatever, however my performance goes today, it's going to change the lives of my families?
Yeah, it was like a dream come true to me, like Oscar De La Hoya seeing me spar and actually him liking me, liking what I do in the ring.
Did you feel that you gave him the best performance on that sparring session, or did you feel that, you know what, I didn't do everything that I was planning to do, or did you hold back a little bit?
Oh, I sparred two guys. I know I could have done better.
Frankie, let me ask you this, because you grew up in the same roots of where Oscar De La Hoya is from, you know, and already people are labeling you that you're going to be pretty much the face of Golden Boy. They're hoping that you're going to be able to carry on the torch that a lot of great Mexican-American fighters have been able to hold on to, and that right now we're lacking. We don't have a Mexican-American out there representing. How much pressure is that for you at this moment?
I really don't feel any pressure. I'm just going to do what I always do. It's one fight.
Frank, let me ask you this, because, you know, Jose Benavides has been on our show. We were able to talk to him a little bit, and I got word that, and I've read here and saw that you beat him four times. Is there a little bit of a rivalry? I mean, how do you guys feel about each other? And it looks like you guys may be on a little bit of a collision course.
Not at all. We're cool. We talk outside the ring and everything, and my coaches get along with his dad. I fought him four times. There's no rivalry, though.
Let me ask you this. What are the plans that you guys have? I mean, do you know your name opponent that you're going to be stepping in for your pro debut?
My coach knows the name.
Yeah, I just got the information from Eric Gomez, the matchmaker at Golden Boy. And
uh-huh.
I believe he's 25 years old, and his name is Clayvon Howard, and he's from Palm Beach, Florida. And I believe he's got like a 3-2 record, five professional fights. And I was informed this morning that he accepted the fight, and he signed the contract, and it's been returned to Golden Boy. So we're ready to take care of business.
Now, are you guys having the press release on Monday? Is that still happening, or has it been moved to another date?
Yes, David. I was just informed also by the media personnel at Golden Boy that the press conference is going to be taking place on Monday, and they're going to release the details shortly. But I've been told it's going to be Monday at 12 o'clock in a location in East Los Angeles.
Frankie, let me ask you, how does a young man like yourself, okay, stay focused and really honestly stay disciplined and growing up and seeing that sometimes, you know, because it's a lot of, I mean, you're putting a lot of pressure on yourself. You know, I would say as a young man, you have to have a really stable background in family-wise, you know. How do you stay grounded?
My parents, they don't let me go out that much, and my coaches, they help a lot all the time. When I have free time, they pick me up to train or do other stuff that's with boxing.
Have your coaches showed you, like, other fighters that have derailed off of the track of being a superstar by maybe getting in the mix of things that they shouldn't be involved with? Have they showed you that? Is that one way they've kept you on the right road of trying to be a world champion?
Yeah, they talk to me about that all the time, about people that don't make it, that have a lot of talent, but they just don't train hard, they don't have the discipline.
I'm going to pass it to my co-host, 916 out of Sacramento. Go ahead, brother.
Yo, what's up, Frankie, man? You know, we just talked to Joseph Benavidez a couple weeks ago, and I asked him why he decided to just sign now rather than to pursue the gold medal. And he said, you know, his dad and him, they kind of agreed that you can just reach your goals sooner. You know, financially, he could set up his family the way he wanted to, you know, rather than having to wait and attempt to get the gold medal. What was your decision? You know, was it your family's and your decision both, as far as rather than pursuing the Olympics, just signing now? What decision made that for you?
My parents had a financial problem, and I've been told that the gold medal in the Olympics is not worth that when it was like when De La Hoya won it and all those guys in the back in the days.
Now, were there other companies pursuing you like Top Rank, or was it pretty much just Golden Boy was the one that, you know, you were interested in?
It was Top Rank offered me a deal and Golden Boy, and I think I found more comfortable with Golden Boy.
Growing up in East L.A., coincidentally having the same birthday as Oscar, was he your idol growing up, coming up as a kid as a boxer? Was he the guy that you looked up to?
Yes, he was my idol. He was ever since I was a little kid. I remember I went up to Big Bear, the training camp, to visit Shane Mosley's training camp, and I passed by his house, and I said to myself that one day I want to be like him.
So a lot of times when kids, when they're starting up in sports, they always picture themselves winning a championship, winning a title. Did you ever picture there was going to be a day where you'd be signing to fight for Oscar De La Hoya? And when you did sign with them, was it everything like you thought it would be?
Yeah, it was like a dream come true.
Yeah, man, that's cool. You know, I want to ask your coach something. I kind of want to hear your response too, though. It looks like they're going to be putting you on TV a lot on this new Fight Night show and stuff. Is your coach and are you guys at all, you know, worried about maybe just too much too soon as far as trying to get you out there? Are you comfortable with the weight that Oscar and Golden Boy is going to be pushing you?
You know what? If you did a little research, you'll see some of the articles that were written and that article that came out in the Ring magazine in January. And I think that Frankie is just a real special kid. He's very unique, not only his talent, but his work ethic, his focus, his determination. And I understand the big picture. Obviously, Frankie's new to that. And although Coach Ronnie Rivoda and myself are new to the pro game, you know, we think we know what we have in this young man. And he's got a great, great foundation. You know, his family, he comes from a very loving environment, a strong support group. And I think that the way it was presented to us by Golden Boy, they have a great game plan for him. You know what? I think that as long as everybody does their part, everybody's going to be really happy. And I tell you what, this kid is just such a great kid to work with, and I can't say enough about the kid. And
Hector, let me ask you this, because obviously Golden Boy has worked on trying to bring back the boxing scene. I wouldn't say bring it back to the LA scene, but that seems to be the roots of building a superstar in LA. Is that how comfortable does that make that for you guys?
Well, not only comfortable, but it feels really special and it feels right, because this is where it all began for us, Dave. You know, we're all from the neighborhood. You know, we all share the same, roots. Most of the people that are involved with Golden Boy, Oscar De La Hoya, Eric Gomez, you know, Raul, all the group over at Golden Boy, you know, we all have a lot in common. And it's just amazing that, you know, like Frankie was born on his birthday, February 4th, 1992, the year that Oscar won the gold medal in Barcelona. And you know what, if you know or you follow even amateur boxing, a lot of these kids that fight at the Nokia, like Luis Ramos, Charles
right.
Huerta, the Molinas, you know what, we've known all these kids since they were little. So it's so neat to see all the guys just, you know, from the silver gloves to the golden gloves. It's an incredible feeling to, you know, that we've developed strong friendships over the years, and to see everybody achieving, you know, their level of success, and it's just a special feeling. And now to be stepping in, obviously we have the benefit of like Hector Lopez, the coach for Luis Ramos and Ronnie Rios. You know, that they paved the way for us, and they were very helpful and instrumental and actually, you know, making the decision to go with Golden Boy a lot easier. Top Rank, they were incredible when they, you know, they talked to us. They have a lot to offer. But at the end of the day, you know, Frankie felt really comfortable with Oscar sitting in on the negotiations. We had some long, I believe, like 2-3 hour sessions with Oscar, and I think Oscar knows talent when he sees it, and let's face it, you know, we can hype everybody up, but this kid's just ready to go. And
you got to figure at 19 years old, and for Top Rank and Golden Boy, who are the big major players in the boxing game when it comes to promotional, they got to see something in him. Yeah, 18,
he
right?
He just turned 18.
Yeah, got it. It's got to have something special there for somebody to want to put him up and televise his fights and really honestly put an investment and get in on, you know, ESPN article or even Ring Magazine, because I've seen he's in the January issue. Ready alone has to say something there for you.
Well, absolutely. And like I said, I mean, you know, your detractors and, you know, and like what do the young kids like to say, the haters? You know, they might say that it's all hype, but you know what? You're going to see that there's no hype here. I mean, this kid is the real deal.
So it's safe to say, you know, when I hear you talk about, you know, John, you know, the Molina brothers, you hear about Charlie Huerta and, you know, Ramos. It's safe to say that with Frankie, really honestly, it's not a new kid in the school grounds, you know, because that ground he's very familiar with and he's played with these kids before.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, we work with those guys. So I'm sure if you ask them, they would have nothing but positive things to say about the young man. And hopefully us also, because, like I said, it's a coaching fraternity. I think that we taught our kids the right way, kind of a old school, you know, have respect for your opponents. And we're not into trash talking. We're just into taking care of business. And at the end of the day, whoever has the most talent, who is ever the best prepared is, nine times out of ten, the guy that's going to come out victorious.
Frankie, let me ask you, what is the best part of your Arnold's arsenal that you think you bring into the ring and that's going to really honestly relate with the fight fans? What is it about you right now in your style that you think is going to be fight fan friendly?
I'm very strong. I have speed. I'm a boxer puncher, so we've seen a lot of knockouts, and I don't know.
Now, you know, I had asked Jose Benavides, and I said, you know, a lot of times it's very difficult to get the Mexican people to accept you, and being that you're first-generation Mexican-American, am I correct about that?
Yes.
Now, that is really hard to get the pro-Mexicanos to accept you. Now, is that something that are you earning to want to receive, you know, their acceptance, like the way Oscar De La Hoya did at one point in his career, you know, and even to this day, he's always wanted that acceptance.
Yes.
I'm going to pass it on to my co-host, Strikeheart. Strike, you got any questions for Frankie?
Yeah, I got a few questions for you, Frankie. Let me start off by asking you, being the eighth out of nine kids in your family, is that something that helped you in your boxing career, you know, fighting for the last cookie in the cookie jar, being one of the younger ones in the family?
Yeah, that's helped me a lot. When I'm in the last round, I'm tired. I just think about the family, and it gets me through.
Uh-huh. So another question for you, too. You came out of the LAPD boxing program. Can you tell us a little bit about that program and what it has done for you?
The PAL program has done a lot for me. I joined it when I was 8 years old. I had my first fight with them. And the coaches are awesome.
Uh-huh. Okay, here's another one for you. We've been saying it, you know, throughout the whole interview. You're already being compared to Oscar De La Hoya. You know, what do you think of the comparison? Is it something you're comfortable with at this point, not even having your pro debut happen yet? Do you appreciate that, and does it make you feel a little bit, you know, nervous, of course?
No, I don't think I've earned it, but, well, I'm humble, so.
Because, I mean, we've all heard it said, you know, how many, I lost count of how many of the next Oscar De La Hoyas we've had to this point, and people like Victor Ortiz, sometimes you feel like maybe that was pushed on him a bit too soon. So how is it that you're going to avoid that happening to you?
Work hard, train hard, and don't lose the fights.
I got to say, I liked his answer, what he said. I don't think I've earned it. You know what I mean? And to me, that shows the maturity that he has, being 18, just turning 18, you know.
Yeah.
Recognizing that, you know.
Along those lines, too, being that you're 18, I'm assuming that a lot of the friends you have are the same age. You know, how is it difficult for you to maintain relationships with your friends? Because I'm sure that they are not having to deal with the level of responsibility that you have right now.
Yeah, it's difficult when they're calling you and you're in practice and you can't answer the phone, or you can't hang around with them when you go home. You have to get some rest. It's hard.
Yeah, and I mean, you have the opportunity of a lifetime ahead of you, but is there a part of you that resents the fact that you're missing out on being, you know, a young guy? Is it something you think you'll miss looking back 10 years from now?
Not at all, because I know at the end of the hard work's going to pay off.
Yeah, I think that's the right way to look at it. It looks like you're already scheduled not only to be on the Hopkins-Jones Jr. undercard, but I think they've already penciled you in for the Mayweather-Mosley undercard as well. Is that
That's right.
true? So,
That's
so
correct.
What are your thoughts about being on, you know, two pay-per-view undercards, not even having debuted yet? That's a little crazy.
I feel blessed.
I would too. So who do you pick in those fights? Who do you
Which
think will win?
Well,
the Jones Jr. Hopkins fight and the Mayweather Mosley fight. Who comes out the winner?
The Mayweather Mosley. I have to go with Mosley.
There
wow.
you go, Frankie.
There
you go, Frankie. We got to keep it around the same area. Pomona, East Los Angeles, Witter. Keep it all right there.
Yeah. And then the Hopkins, Roy Jones. I don't know about that one. That one's going to be kind of hard. I don't know who to pick.
Well, about that fight, is the fact that you were like one year old when that fight happened the first time around in 1993, is that evidence, now that you're fighting on the undercard of the rematch, that it's just been a little bit too long coming?
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be a little bit strange fighting on the undercard for a rematch and here when you were one, the first fight happened. That's a little surreal.
You know, if you want to be able to check out Frankie Gomez, go to frankiegomezboxing.com. Frankie, do you want to make a shout out to anybody out there that's listening? You want to leave it in the ring? What you want?
Yeah, to all the people from LA, from California, and. Looking forward for them to see me in the pay-per-view with Roy Jones and Hopkins and my family.
All right, brother. Well, man, I wish you the best of luck. And tell Mr. Ibarra there, thank you very much for having you on with us on Leaving the Ring. And hopefully we can get you on back after your fight with on the undercard of Roy Jones and Bernard Hopkins and see how things went and how you felt and, you know, and maybe discuss a little bit more of what's holding in the future for you.
Thank you very much.
Oh, man. Okay, let's well, there you go. We had Frankie Gomez on the line, who just got signed with Golden Boy. And really, honestly, he's on a collision course with Jose Benavides, who's at 140 himself. And you got to talk about how deep that division is right now, man. I mean, and especially these two young kids. And mentally, you have to say that Frankie is going to be in the mind of Jose Benavides if they were ever to face each other, even though you could sit back and say, well, you know, amateur fight game is completely different from the pro. But when you have four wins, W's above your opponent, that has something to be in play with your head, right, Chris?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's hard to get a gauge on this kid until I see him fight. You know, obviously, I know maybe his interview skills aren't the best, but he's a very young guy. You know, I think at that age as well, being put on such a platform and such a stage, it's probably something he's not quite used to. In the amateurs, you're not really doing a lot of interviews and stuff like that. So I'm really, you know, the fact that we got to talk to him and both Benavides, Joseph, I'm very curious to see how their careers are going to unfold and if eventually down the line there is a collision course. I mean, these are both young Mexican-American fighters that maybe carrying the torch in the next 5, 10, 15 years from now.
Yeah, you're right. You know, and I got to see how it plays out. You know, Top Rank obviously has a way of moving fighters. You know, Golden Boy, same thing. And really, you're going to be able my thing about with Jose Benavides is how often you're going to be able to see him, where Golden Boy – is able to put their LA fighters right there, make them a hometown favorite because they have fight cards in that in the LA downtown city area, Nokia Club, like you mentioned earlier, other places like that, and putting them on also on the pay-per-view cards, it's something else, you know what I mean? They didn't even avoid putting them on the Club Nokia card. They put him right away so he can be televised by millions and millions of people on pay-per-view strike card. What do you think about that, brother? I mean, that to me it shows really honestly a lot of faith in such a young fighter at the age of 18.
Yeah, and it's certainly going to put a lot of pressure on a kid that's 18 years old. I mean, very few 18-year-olds are going to have to deal with the level of pressure that's going to be on Frankie. So I wish him the best of luck because to carry that on your shoulders, that ain't nothing easy.
It ain't nothing easy at all, you know. And you got to say, too, you know, it's a little funny. You ask him a question, he's just direct on no.
Yeah.
You know, and you can tell, though, that he's just one of those kind of kids. That, and really, if you kind of look back, kids that are really more direct to the point, you could tell they're a little more grounded, you know what I mean, where they're always thinking. You remember those kind of kids in the background. You got to remember those kind of kids in the background, Chris, the ones that were really quiet, but they took care of their business, and when they did laugh, it meant something, you know what I mean? Or when they broke a smile, there was a reason behind it. It was just, you know, not a given away for free smile or laugh.
Yeah, I'm sure there were. I mean, this is a kid that it sounds like his whole family has kind of been relying upon this moment. You know, he said his family had financial problems. This is a kid that grew up, it sounded like, knowing that he was going to be the breadwinner. He's had a lot of responsibilities. He has to stay disciplined. You could tell that, you know, some of his youth, he's had to compromise it. You know, when Strikehearts asked him, he would probably want to go hang out with his friends, but his family knows they have to, you know, keep him straight on the straight and narrow path. And, you know, it's very disciplined, but to be able to stick with it and to be able to, you know, see your dreams come true, you know, I mean, all the hard work pays off, and apparently his parents, you know, as he accredited them to, did a good job.
Yeah, you're right, you know, and this is very common in you know what, it's very common in when you grow up in a tough neighborhood in the ghettos, it doesn't matter what ghettos, you got Philly ghettos, you got Puerto Rican ghettos, Mexico ghettos, you got American ghettos, it's very common where the son or even a daughter, you know, like the, especially Hispanic families and black families, where, you know, the sons pick up, you know, and help what is needed, you know, it's expected, you know, and hearing Frankie say, hey, you know, we had some financial problems, so it was important for me to turn pro, because not only you got to put you got to respect them, and even, let me say this, man, in the boxing game, for some reason, we've kind of veered onto wanting to hear the fighters be a certain way or have a certain look, and we've forgotten how we're supposed to fall in love with them and how they perform in the ring. You know, there have been fighters in history that don't talk much, but they speak really loud in the ring.
Yeah, and I mean, people don't remember now, but when Floyd Mayweather Jr. started out, for the longest time, he wasn't really brass and didn't have that personality he has now. I think he kind of learned how to self-promote himself, you know, that it would work out better for his career, and it did. Same with Manny Pacquiao. He's pretty quiet. I mean, granted, he's got a lot more character and personality now, but he was a lot more quieter early on in his career as well. So it comes with time, it comes with an experience, but you're right. I'd rather have a fighter be more exciting in the ring than his personality, because that's what I'm really most concerned with.
That's what you're most concerned about, and that's the whole reason why you're tuning on. And I got to say, the quiet ones are the ones you have to worry about, and he's obviously one of the quiet ones. You know, he's one of those kind of kids, you don't really know what he's thinking. It's like, you know, Art from Stand and Fight, my co-partner, you know, does basically everything for Leaving the Ring and There Will Be Blood. You know, Art's one of those kind of guys. Like, you ask Art a question, he's like, no. Yeah, and you're like, come on, man, can you give me some more feedback, brother, or what? You know, but their work speaks for itself. You know, and that's what really honestly I think as a fight fan, hardcore fight fan, boxing fan, that, you know, love that we have for the sport, that's what we're waiting for. We want to see that workmanship. We want to see how the blueprint is laid out. Let me get my boy Coltrane back on the line, man, because, you know, I always like having Coltrane. He's got a radio show on Monday night at Talk Shoe, right, Coltrane?
Yep. Yes, talkshoe.com/TC/63796. We also got the link to the radio show on our homepage on our YouTube, Guard the Grill Boxing page as well. Thanks.
Go and check out, you know, the Garden Grill family, brothers. You know, you guys can do that. You know, you got Ride or Die, Big Mike, Coltrane. Hey, man, Coltrane, let me ask you this, man, because honestly, I I'm a little upset with you, brother. What happened to
what
happened with my coffee with Coltrane, man?
Coffee with Coltrane. It's funny. I was just talking to Ride or Die about that. You know, shout out to my dude, Ride or Die, who's been extremely busy on the ones and twos with Guard Your Girl Boxing. You know, he's kind of taking on another hat as the producer over there at Guard Your Girl Boxing. So we're thinking about bringing that back after, you know, after probably the Mayweather-Mosley fight, you know, once things start to die down a little bit. I'll probably be bringing that back every week, man. Actually, I'm going to replay my my all-Mexican gangster list because I got a lot of requests for that.
Yeah.
Shout out to my Boricuas out there because, you know, unfortunately, we don't have a big Mexican community here in Philly. So we do got a big Boricua community here. So I'm going to go down to little Puerto Rico land and do a show with that, you know, talk to the people, the natives. And I'll probably do a show with that, too, coming soon. So, yeah, I got some heat from my Boricua brothers about, you know, not showing them the love.
Oh, man. Well, you know, we got everything over here in Kelly. You know, you can
go to one
block, you're gonna have the Puerto Ricans. You go to another block, you get the Portuguese. You go to another block, the Filipinos. For some reason, it don't matter where you go in California. You're going to find a neighborhood that you belong in. You know? But, man, let's talk some boxing here really quick, man.
No doubt.
Let's go back with Alexander. Obviously, we got mm-hmm. He was very impressive with Juan Urango. He did his thing, you know. And now you got Zab kind of pulling the Shane Mosley, jumping in, calling for his fight, wanting to step in with a young prospect there, you know, to maybe test the waters with them and maybe get himself, Zab Judah, speaking of Zab Judah, getting himself back into the limelight, into the boxing world. How much of a chance do we give Zab Judah, being that Zab has ultra talent, but for some reason, the discipline doesn't factor up. Like you hear these kids, Jose Benavidez and Frankie Gomez, it doesn't seem to be in the same level.
Right. No, you're absolutely correct. And the game is mental just as much as it is physical. And sometimes, like a guy like Zab, who, you know, was being compared to Sweet Pea Whitaker early on in his career, you know, because his God-given talent. And I think those problems was there back then, but he was a lot younger then. And, you know, as he continued to get older and step up his level of competition, I think you saw some of those deficiencies that was already there. I just think Zab is one of these guys that just always relies on God-given talent. And once he hit a wall in the ring, you know, he gets tired. Boxing is the one sport you can't get tired of. You have no teammates to back you up, you know.
Exactly.
And I don't want to speculate on training camps and all that, but just from different people that I talk to, you know, the guy doesn't train real hard, you know. So, and it shows, the results show in all his big-time fights. You know, after the fifth round, you know, Zab Judah runs into that wall. So, you know, as far as him fighting a Devin Alexander, I just think at this age, in this stage of his career, I think he's going to give you five good rounds like he always do. And Devin being a much younger, the much more athletic, the much more fresher fighter, I just see him prevailing in the end, perhaps by knockout. If you put a gun in my head, I'd probably say it ends by knockout.
Hey, you know what? And that would not be too far-fetched. You know, Strikeheart, let me ask you this, because obviously, Zab Judah, you have got to consider, look, this guy's been a world champion. You can't undermine him. The guy does bring tons and tons of talent, okay? He's got a good uppercut. You know, he when he uses his jab, it's beautiful. You know, he can be explosive at any given moment. Now, Alexander and his people, if they were considering, how much are they playing with the pot of fire in their hands? Because obviously in this bout with Zab Judah, they can be burned where it doesn't lead them to a big money fight with Timothy Bradley.
Right. Yeah, there's a little bit of a risk there. I mean, something that might get lost a little bit is the fact that Zab Judah, you know, at junior welterweight, was a much better fighter, in my opinion. He was a guy to give Junior Witter his first loss years ago. Granted, he did come up short against Costa Zou, but, you know, ever since
I wouldn't call it coming up short, brother. I wouldn't call that come up short. Come up short is like, you know, having a point like Sergio Martinez and Paul Williams. That's come up short.
Right. Okay, fair enough. But my point is that I think when he moved up to welterweight, he wasn't really the same guy that he was at 140. I think he's a much more imposing fighter at that weight. You might be a little surprised. I'd be a little interested to see if Zab Judah could even make the weight, because he hasn't attempted
exactly.
it in how long. Yeah. But if he can make the weight comfortably, he could make that a much more difficult fight than we're going to give him credit for ahead of time.
Well, let me ask you guys this real quick. You know, how much do we want to see? I mean, look, man, I've always liked Zab. I like his style. I like the fact that he's got that certain swagger about it when he steps into the ring. You're either going to love him or you're going to hate him. Okay, but we can all be in the same agreement that if he was to be serious, okay, and maybe do that a la Gotti kind of comeback, you know what I mean, where he takes the sport serious. Finally, he understands that legacy is on the line here. Do we root for this man? Or is it a little too late to now cheer in his corner?
It's been too late ever since that low blow. Nobody's been rooting for him since then. He's just the kind of guy you love to hate, but you can't not watch Zab Judah. I mean, as much as I've tried to not care about Zab Judah anymore, because I have, after seeing him lose to everybody at welterweight, I'm like, oh, I gotta watch Zab Judah again. But, you know, he's like the cat that came back, in my opinion. He's always coming back for a title fight. But,
always coming back.
But, yeah.
Oh, so he's like Ricardo Mayorga. Mayorga, you know, but now Mayorga is deciding to try to, you know, his run with MMA and stuff. But I wouldn't be surprised if Mayorga doesn't – he decides, hey, if he wins a title in MMA, and Chris may have a little bit more insight about this, if he was able to be successful as an MMA fighter and get a title somewhere in the trinkets of the titles that kind of circle around in MMA, I wouldn't be surprised to see Mayorga come back and get another title shot in boxing.
I would. He ain't winning no title in MMA. Back to Zab Judah, Devin Alexander. Okay, let's say that Devin Alexander fights Zab Judah and beats him. So what? Really? Who cares? What is it to beat Zab Judah? Zab Judah's a good fighter, exciting, but what's his biggest... He beat Corey Spinks, you know, and he won the unified titles. But then he lost to Carlos Baldemir and made some excuses. I mean, if Zab Judah beats Devin Alexander, it's more an accomplishment for him at this point than vice versa. Devin Alexander's a young guy.
To the average Joe on the street, though, they're not going to know who Junior Witter is or who Juan Arango is. But there's a lot of people out there who know the name Zab Judah. I think that's what it does for him. It gets
and
him
if
a
it's
big,
held in New
big
York,
name.
And if that fight
yeah.
is thrown in New York,
that's
a really big fight.
I was going to say, don't forget that Zab Judah is very known in the African-American community and in the hip-hop community. So he's still a name despite his losses and, you know, all the things he's been through. But he draws. And this is a one of these filler fights. And you see it all the time in boxing. Your fighter fights the older guy that's just a name. You know, history has shown it throughout boxing that fighters do this. And I think what happens, it helps continue to build the brand of Devin Alexander. Now,
exactly. Okay.
I think more people will be like, yo, did you see that young dude who lost to Zab who beat Zab last night? Then vice versa, you know. So you get a chance to build this brand, and you set the stage for Timothy Bradley probably at the end of 2011 next year, you know. So I think it's a good fight for them.
Let me add to what you just said right there too, Coltrane. You know, and you know, Coltrane's bringing back coffee with Coltrane. 97 Ruff is gonna bring. He's going to bring back Coronas with 97 Ruff. You know what I'm saying?
There you go.
But no, this is the thing, too, is this. If you are going to build your fighter, if you're going to build a fighter, and especially an American fighter, and that's the big underlying keyword there, American fighter, okay, because Zab has really honestly has brought a huge draw when he's faced non-American fighters. Costa Zou.
Right,
and
no
Miguel
doubt.
Cote. And he's made them superstars from them defeating him. That, to me, is a great business deal for the Alexander people, because not only are they getting a good draw out of New York, and like you said, the hip-hop heads in the black community, they're mm-hmm. going to want to tune in and watch this fight and see
right.
a new an American step into the ring. And if he beats Zab with that fashionable type of KO style, hey, you know what? He's put boxing in the American map back on.
Yeah, it also evens it out for him when it comes to negotiating a contract with
exactly.
the other two. Because
exactly.
he's a guy who's on the cover of Ring of Magazine, an upcoming issue. He's now building his brand. So if you're Devin Alexander, you don't want to get the 60-40. You're going to want to get the 50-50. This is a way for him to try and do that.
And Devin's story is a little bit more compelling. And it's a shame that we still hear in our society where, you know, when a guy comes from poverty, from rags to riches, it sells more. I don't know how Timothy, you know, Ruff, you can shed some light on how Timothy Bradley was brought up, but I don't think his story is kind of similar to my man, Devin Alexander. You know, he got a brother that's on death row or in prison. He grew up in the slums of St. Louis. You know, and, you know, HBO, they ate that story up. I mean, the buzz that they was building up before the fight with Urango, they kind of was, like you said, starting to build the brand of Devin Alexander. And if he wins his dad fight, I think he's going to be somewhat in the driver's seat a little bit as far as negotiations go. You know, just because HBO seemed like they got his back a little bit. Now, I know Tim Bradley fights on Showtime, so I don't know how that's going to play out, but that's a whole other story.
It's a whole other story, but Don King has not been shying away at putting his fighters on Showbox. And HBO will obviously, if that fight was to happen, I would have to say Timothy is probably going to be making a short trip to HBO, you know, for a unification fight there. It'd be a good matchup. And Timothy Bradley is obviously the opposite of Devin Alexander when it comes in terms of lifestyle and what
okay.
they went through and hardships and stuff. But, hey, you know what? I think I got my man, speaking about Manny Pacquiao, I think I got my boy Manny Pacquiao in Dallas right now. He took a road trip all the way to Dallas. Manny, you there, brother?
Hello. This is Manny Pacquiao.
Manny, how you doing, man? How's the trip? I mean, are you still on the road? Have you arrived at Dallas yet? How's everything going?
I'm in Albuquerque now, and I am staying in the Motel 6.
Oh, you're staying at a 5-star hotel, huh?
No, I'm saving money.
You're saving money.
Because when I go to Dallas, I'm going to be a big baller.
Yeah. This is my boy Eric Esteban, who's the man behind the success of Manny Pacquiao. Eric, how you doing, brother?
Hey, man, I'm good, brother. I'm really good. I'm really – well, actually, I'm really tired.
Are you?
But I'm really good. I'm good.
I would be too. I mean, when did you leave L.A. to go all the way down over there to Dallas to witness?
Well, I left on Tuesday. Oh, no, shoot. All the days are running together. I left on Wednesday,
uh-huh.
and I got a bunch of promo material and some DVDs and some T-shirts, which I sent to you guys. I sent you two T-shirts to thank you
right
for
on. Thank
you.
Appreciate it.
But yeah, so I left on Wednesday, and I'm in Albuquerque now just chilling.
So did you go by yourself? I mean, do you take the little lady with you? I mean, how's that going with you, man? How's that?
Nope. It's kind of like this is my Frodo quest. Actually, the thing about it is that you spoke to Manny for just a second there, but really, because he has an iPhone, and
uh-huh.
he has this weird app on his iPhone where he can merge into my phone whenever I'm talking.
Uh-huh.
It's weird. But anyhow, Manny Pacquiao, actually, he left the lab, you know, where we do all the episodes.
Uh-huh.
After episode 15, after we finished cutting it, and he kept watching it over and over again because he obsessed about it because, you know, he got to meet Manny Pacquiao in episode 15, which we haven't released yet. But he got to meet him at the wild card during media day, and he kind of freaked out. And he left. So I'm kind of chasing him. That's why I had to go to Dallas because he and Manny Boo Boy, I think, are already there, and I'm kind of chasing him. And he literally keeps teasing me and calling me on my iPhone and you know, saying, I'm over here in Albuquerque. And he said that he was with strippers in Vegas. I mean, it's a family show, but he called me right when I was passing through Vegas, and he's like, I got a lap dance. And I'm like, what? What is going on, dude? I mean, he's going a little nuts. I think because he met Manny and he met his hero, he's getting a little
right.
too confident. So
he's
anyhow,
he's now. That's pretty much what happened. He's packing a punch.
I think it was what it is. You know, he's getting a little bit taller, you know. So that's what I'm, that's kind of my quest is I got to chase him and you guys will see the online on my channel on YouTube. You'll see all the episodes as they unfold because hopefully I'll find him in Dallas. I mean, because he met a few Filipino celebrities at the wild card, and he said he's going to hook up with them. I don't even know.
Well, maybe they're the ones that are taking him to the strip, Vegas strip joint.
Did he say that he was going to be a baller? Is that what he said when he got to Dallas?
Yeah, he's going to be a baller, man. you know?
I'm sorry he intruded on the call because I really wanted to talk to you guys, you know, call in and talk about the fight. And anyway.
I tell you what, brother, hopefully everything goes well. I'm pretty sure he's all right. You know, and he's over there chilling and relaxing, and hopefully whoever he's with, they're taking care of him. You know, Manny Pacquiao, so, you know, I know Manny's listening, so, hey, take care. Make sure you watch your toes. Don't let them get stepped on. You know?
Watch your toes. I love it.
Okay, because right now, like Eric said, you got a little taller, and it might be because you're on your tippy toes. You're adding a few, you know, half an inch to your height and all that, but you know what, Eric? Have a safe trip, brother. Call me when you get over there, man. And when I get the shirts, too, I'll have Red send you some shirts down as well. You know, because
First
line that came
I
out.
I saw those online. Those look really tight, man. Those are really tight.
Man. They fit good, too, brother. I'm telling you, they fit good.
Tight so I can wear them in L.A. and I can be sexy?
Hey, yeah. Hey, you know what? You could have took some down so that Minnie could have been wearing them at the strip joint. You know what I mean?
I don't know if you want him. He might be acting a fool in the strip joint. I don't know if you want him repping your radio show when he's wearing your shirt in the strip joint.
Hey,
all I know is he said make it rain a few times before he left. I don't know. I don't even know.
Make it rain. Yeah. All right, Eric, man. You take it easy, brother. It was good to have you on again.
Hey, it's good to talk to you guys all the time. I'll definitely keep you posted as far as my search for Manny Pacquiao.
Yeah, big shout out to Bumble Cloudy, too.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. I think Bumble Cloudy stayed in L.A. because he's not. I don't know if he wanted to see what's going to happen in Dallas.
All right, brother. You take it easy, man. Well, you know, you're all leaving the ring. You're just tuning in. We did have your performer on the show. We just had Manny Pacquiao, and we got Eric chasing him down. Oh, we went all the way down to Dallas, Texas, so that Manny was trying to witness his idol, Manny Pacquiao, try to get past the Ghana Warrior, Joshua Kalati. We're over here talking some boxing. Got my man from Garja Grills. Got a Monday radio show and Coffee with Coltrane. My boy Coltrane's on the line with us. And we got 916 and Strikeheart. But I tell you what, I got to take a break. I know you guys want to take a break. So hold on. We'll come back. And we got some more boxing to talk about. And we got the MMA report.
You're listening to Leaving the Wing. You're listening to Leaving the Ring.
Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound.
That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. give the record a second and a chance to. Hitting people like a scene of amazement. While they slipping back, my feet is planted in the pavement. Crumble like I never do. So now I'm looking dead at you. What are you gonna do? You're looking to the knowledge of a scholar. You say how I breathe, tell them how I holler. I'm the E-double, and I proclaim my name. Straight up, good gang, peace, all game. I'm like a rhino, running through the roughest pack. They figure I'm a trigger, happy nigga, so they step back. Breathe, the microphone is boost lasts the longest, the news is strongest. It ain't a game, it's plain to see. You listen to the sounds of breathe. There ain't no future in your front. Kilo. And if you ever do, yo, we'll never be with Leo. Serving in the Cherokee, or maybe it's a Geo. Back on Black Benzo, we'll get it up amigo. Never have to worry about my poppy getting jumped. Cause if we ever do, yo, TV, pop the strong. Cause we don't go for playing, wanna play the rapper ball. When I'm on the mic, I ain't for playing, not at all. Cause I clock 10 G's a week, booming at my peak. Always see East sober, but I do get geek. I can give you a job, a place to eat. Hardy, meet your homeboy Marty at a B.O.B. Party taking over, barking like a dog named Zoom. I'm picking suckers like a four-leaf clover. Ain't biting words on the mic, they can cobra. So now they saying egg breeders get no. I'm the B, the R to the double E-T. And down with my homie G-A-S and O-E. And suckers cause I'm fatty cause we still be disagreeing. I don't give a cause I'm from F-L-I-M-P. In a city where pity runs low. If you ever shoot through my city, now you know. Cause we are strictly business and we also got a pride. And if you don't like it, I suggest you break wide. Suckers study looking for the ammo when he wire. Thinking that illegal is the best and so they die. I ain't got time to see a fiend fiend out. To give up all his money and to give up what he got. That's the way I am, MCB cannot be different. Never change the ways for the world or the government. If it was the president, then I would say fact. You leave it up to me, I'll paint the White House black and it'll feature in your front. If I was a fiend, then my gold would be stolen. Put my name Breed on everything I own. And when I get my Jeep, I'm putting Breed on the chrome. Shine it up good, kick it through my neighborhood. Motorola phone, fat rims in the Kenwood. Put the kid around it, and then I'll have to drop. Just because the riding people think I'm stolen rocks, but ain't no future in your front. The rules of the world. Live my life raw, cause I never liked the law. Wear top tens on my ass, Eugene. Selling big gates and tip a tat to the fiend. Stock much dollars, but I never break a sweat. Trying to move out, my pocket saying, you got my back and I got yours. What time is it? Turn down the door. Let's start this party, all right? Get out that fat fat band.
Niggas so scared to die, they hold their motherfucking breath till I pass, cause they ask and I smell them. The
S-T-E-L-L-E-D-T-H-E-M, I spell them. That makes me have to swell one. I lump up one head, catch a body with the shoddy, pump up one dead. Red alert, niggas is about to get hurt. Do work with skirt, like a tag on the murder. Nighttime is the right time for creeping. Vandalize your crib, rip your wife while she's sleeping. I've been off the deep end since I was semen. That's why now I'm such a motherfucking demon. Screaming, my bloody head off, shit on my mind, I got to get off. Can't even hold the joint, that's a let off. A couple of rounds from the big 3 pounds. Seven, that's about 1100 as of now. How can one man kill so many innocent people before the age of 20? Life ain't worth a penny in my book, bag it. That's why I took baggage, shit, I'm a crook, bag it. Fat dude, leather jacket, a bag it. Along with the jewels, smacking tools out the hands of fools. On the strength that they don't know what they holding. Niggas call me Taylor, cause the way that I be sewing. Shut up, cause I get up, talk my ass straight. Making more moves than you hard from state to state. I feed the great. And if a nigga tells you different, you turn around, you ask a nigga, fuck it, you be snippin'. Cause when it comes to rippin', I am the riff-raff. And that's to say nothing, nigga, don't get past.
All you niggas saying that my shit is sick. Just imagine the 90% of my brain that I ain't even used yet. Take a deep breath quick, suck it as much air as my lungs will permit. Then I start to kick that shit. I've been getting busy before the planet started to turn. Before the bees and birds and Adam and Eve occurred. Prior to all creation, in other words, when the female egg will merge with the man's sperm, I stand firm, my words burn through your exterior. Why you only pretend to be? I could double my density from 360 degrees to 720 instantly. Six multiplied by five, by four, by three, by two, and one. Go ahead and calculate the sum. The time is coming. I will summon the punish. Motherfuckers with mouths to run it over with rubbish. When I come through, niggas stand still in the statue. Cause if I have to, I batter your whole rap crew. Then I'll attack you with words that's absurd. Rip your fucking skin off just to get on your nerves.
Now Rob, you know you dead wrong. You know, turn me up, turn me up. Jack me with the fuck
now, now, you know, now. You know you dead wrong for this one right here, baby. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Another day, another dollar. Sharks wanna bite, don't bother. But this rhyme the truth, and the truth's hard to swallow. Don Dada, hard act to follow. See Rock Walla with the iced out dog collar. My crew want it all. This bout is scheduled for 1-4. We can build or we can grow. Yes, y'all, that's call for alcohol. Damn, monkey wrench, fucking up the whole program. Them dying, now them half a respect me. Them dying, now them half a come correct me. Getting nothing but the music, I'm slipping. Big head niggas, don't listen, listen. I N I X, my complex, got a complex. Living in an apartment complex. I'm cashing chin checks every 1st and 15th. Failed my urinalysis, they threw me in the clink. 5-0's can't stop the pie, bro, Johnny. Still blazing young MCs to the party. Sideways 915. Be aware of the fatal flying guillotine. Are you prepared? Them down, know them half a respect me. Them down, know them half a come correct me. Time flow, constantly the way time flow. I live by the cold salad, mad BLO. My crew swarm in, tell a bitch please. Didn't mama tell you about the birds and the bees? Especially them killers. Girls night out with gorillas. Mm-hmm. Too slow, you blow caterpillar. Son got game. Any pack of Roscoe, be cold train. Player, we ain't playing. Brush associated labels. Don't let me in, I push my way in. As I was saying, I push my way in. Fuck it. How many suffering for this hip hop? If I can't see it, can't trust it. Tick tock, when will that fake shit stop? Flip flop, battery go dead in the clock. Them down, now them half a respect me. Them down, now them half a come correctly. Then I am but the music, I'm slipping. Big head niggas don't listen. Listen, Stapleton, the Wild West Park here. Poor Richmond, now born Jungle Nail. We dumbing, stunning, bartender keep them coming. Niggas with alcohol problems, 100 miles and running, yeah. Matt, I came here with crooks, but I'm still here. Call me every name in the book, but I'm still here. What up, Doc? This Looney Tune got him shell shot. Airfields dropping out the sky once my hand got back. I check you in, put the smack down the tail while everything's black. I'm like the cast in Belly, I don't know how to act on wax. Rock while I bring it on back. Them down, now them half a respect me. Them down, now them half a come correctly. Time flow, constantly the way time flow. I live by the coast, Dallas, man. PLO, 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 yeah, PLO, yeah.
All right,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, man, we're back on live on the air. I apologize, I had to double it because I was speaking to Hector Ibarra and Frankie Gomez, you know, talking to them a little bit about they're having their press conference in L.A., and it's going to be happening Monday, and we were just kind of discussing, you know, that press conference with Golden Boy, and I'm going to roll out there so that I can show some support and get my chance, too, to meet Frankie Gomez in person, and as well as maybe roll out there and meet Jose Benavides in person as well. Let's go back real quick. Chris 916, do we have the Stand and Fight sponsored by Stand and Fight, the rundown in the news?
Yes, we do. Where to start today? First up, we got WBC heavyweight champion Vitaly Klitschko announcing his next fight against Albert Sosnowski. Who's that, you may ask? I don't know. But it's going down May 29th in Germany. I really don't know too much about this fight. I guess maybe we can talk about it later. Aside from that, you got Demetrius Hopkins making his return to the ring on March 25th against Little Hagler, Freddie Norwood. Surprised to see he's still around, but Demetrius trying to come back after that Kendall Holt defeat. Also announced WBO lightweight champion Michael Katsidis taking on the UK's Kevin Mitchell on May 15th in London. Kevin Mitchell, a guy I'm hearing about from a lot of the UK fans, keep an eye on. Also, we got Ricky Hatton in the news. Is he going to retire? Is he not going to retire? Okay. Word is he may be up to 200 pounds now. If that's the case,
he probably
should retire, but that's just rumors. Based on the pictures I've seen, I definitely think he's hovering around cruiserweight. And BJ Flores, the undefeated cruiserweight, looks like he's taking the step to MMA as well. Signed
is
with Shine
right?
Fight, the same company that Ricardo Morga signed with. Looks like he's going to make the transition to mixed martial arts.
Who is this Shine promotional company? Because we're getting stuff from them right now, and I posted it on their Will Be Blood Fight Show. Who is that, Chris? I mean, I've never heard of this promotional company.
Actually, they're a new promotion. They're just a new company just starting off. I don't really know who their financial supporters are, but they must have some pretty deep pockets to be bringing over both Ricardo Muerga and BJ Flores from boxing. So I believe this will be their first event. It is going to be on pay-per-view. Not really the smartest business model for a company just starting out, but to be able to pay those fighters, they're going to have to do something. They're going to have to bring in some kind of revenue. So
Let me ask you this before we continue on the rundown news sponsored by Stand and Fight. This is the question that I posed for you guys, for you and Strike. And is this the smartest thing? I mean, I'm not understanding why BJ Flores, cruiserweight fighter, wouldn't want to make that transition. Could it be possibly that he's not getting any fights at cruiserweight at the moment, so maybe financially it's not deepening his pocket. It's not putting money in his pocket, basically.
Well, no, he's not making the big paydays in boxing. I mean, he's undefeated, but his style isn't the most appealing or the most exciting, and he's not getting the big fights. But as I said with Mayorga last week, I still fail to believe that they're going to make more money in mixed martial arts unless they're in the UFC than they can make in boxing. But I don't know. Maybe they're just frustrated with the business, and they just think that they could probably do a lot better with their striking skills at mixed martial arts and move up the ladder both financially and professionally a lot faster.
Well, I hope BJ doesn't blow in the MMA.
Oh, boy. Anyways.
I'm sorry.
So
I'm sorry.
Aside from that, that aside, we just got the big event going down this weekend, the event, Manny Pacquiao versus Joshua Claudi, undercard, Humberto Soto, David Diaz for the vacant WBC lightweight title. Why that's vacant, I'm not for sure, because last time I checked, I don't believe that Valero vacated his title, but that's the case. And you got Alfonso Gomez, we recently had on, taking on Jose Luis Castillo. So that's pretty much the news. It's all mostly focused around the big event this weekend.
All smiles coming from Jose Luis Castillo and Alfonso Gomez. Seeing the press release picture. And I got to say, you know, I know some people are talking a little bit about Humberto Soto versus David Diaz. Diaz getting his way back into the ring, going in with a very, very tough contender in Humberto Soto. Now, I'm wondering how that's going to play out. Strikeheart, any prediction, any breakdown on that fight? What do you got? Who do you got? Why do you got that person?
Well, let's break it down to its simplest parts here. Sometimes you can get into a little bit of trouble comparing guys who have fought in the same guy, but they have both fought Jesus Chavez very recently. you had Umberto Soto basically walk through him on the scorecards, and you had a lot closer of a fight, David Diaz. So I think that's pretty telling, honestly, considering that those fights, I think, were only about 2 or 3 months apart. I think Umberto Soto walks away with the W, just boxing and maybe cooling our emotions down for a little while before the main event. But it should be a good matchup. I think the undercard here is pretty good. I know John Duddy's also on it. It'd be nice to – I know Aram is trying to shove him in a match with Kelly Pavlik, maybe a bit too soon. But I think the undercard's a pretty nice one. I'm going with Umberto Soto.
And you're also getting Jose Benavides that's on that undercard as well. He's going to be facing somebody. I can't remember the name of the person off the top of my head. But, Chris, what do you think, man? What do you think about David Diaz? We've had on the show him and Jesus Chavez at the same time, and they're about to step into the ring and face each other.
I got to go with Soto here. Diaz, I know he beat Jesus Chavez in his last fight, but that Manny Pacquiao fight, he took a pretty good beating. That's one of those fights almost where the last Miguel Cotto fight, where I think it might have taken something out of them. Humberto Soto, even if they were in their prime, I think I might favor Soto. Both are your typical Mexican fighters, grinders, not the most highly skilled, although I do think Soto has a skill advantage. Diaz may be a little bit bigger. I remember he fought at junior welterweight against Kendall Holt, but I just got to favor Soto. I think he's got a little bit more momentum at this point in his career, but, you know, it should be a pretty entertaining fight, if not the most skillful.
And it's one thing about David Diaz, you know, is that he's not the biggest puncher in the world, okay? And he's a guy that really honestly gets hit a little bit too much. But even though you would have to say David Diaz doesn't have, like, a strong, strong following, you have to say when it comes to coming to fight, he does come to fight. You know, you're going to get a fight out of David Diaz. You know, we saw him give Eric Morales a good fight. We saw what happened with, I wouldn't say it was a good fight with Manny Pacquiao, but we saw that he did come to fight. He didn't give up. He did come to fight. It's the same with Jesus Chavez. But how much, even with Kendall Holt, got in with Kendall Holt at one time. But how much is left of David Diaz getting in with Humberto Soto? Kitty upset him. I can't say it's not possible. There's always a possibility, but right now it looks like the tracking shoes that Humberto Soto has on his feet or doesn't look like any time he's going to slip or fall. Right, Strike?
Yeah, and absolutely. I think what you're saying about David Diaz is he's a tough son of a bitch. But beyond that, Humberto Soto should be able to outbox him. Like you said, David Diaz doesn't exactly pack the biggest punch. And Humberto Soto is a guy who's going to want to box in the first place. So where does that leave David Diaz? It doesn't leave him in a very good position.
You
can't exactly picture him winning by knockout, and you would venture to guess he's not going to beat Humberto Soto in a boxing match either.
Absolutely. You know, and before I let Chris here continue on the rundown sponsored by Stand and Fight, I do want to make a shout out to Coach Rick, a really good friend of Even in the Ring. He's got some great, great methods in training fighters. He's trained his wife, who's been successful. And also, just to make a quick announcement, Coach Rick has been asked to be a trainer in a reality boxing series. I don't know exactly what it's going to be on. I'm hoping it's going to be on like a Versus or something like that, so that you can have a chance to see Coach Rick show his goods. Because there's one thing about Coach Rick, man, I like the way he trains his fighters, the hand mitts, you know, the pro mitts that he does. Guy's very educational and is doing big, big things for the boxing community. So shout out to Coach Rick. If you want to check out his DVD, go to the Will Be Blood Fight Show or Stand and Fight, and you can click and you can see what I'm talking about. And you can see his workmanship speaks for itself. Go ahead, Chris, on the finish up on the news, on the rundown, brother.
Honestly, that was all the news that there was. You know, like I said, it's kind of a slow, not a slow week as far as the event.
I think there's one more thing I'll bring up. I've heard lots of rumblings about it, is that Mike Tyson is thinking about unretiring again.
I think that's just another, man. Honestly, I've heard that too many times. And Mike even asked that numerous times, and I think it even irritated Mike Tyson, Iron Mike, where he was like, I'm not coming back. Look at me. I'm out of shape. I haven't been in the ring. And you can really honestly say the desire in his eyes, like Yori Foreman said when he walked into that gym, the eye of the tiger, I think it's left him many, 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 many moons ago. So I don't see that happening. I know a lot of people fantasize about it and kind of toy with it and hoping that the Iron Mac comes back because the American heavyweights are in such a shamble. But in all honesty, Mike ain't going to come back. I mean, he's what? How old is he now? 43, 44?
43, yeah.
Yeah,
I don't think he's coming back either, but it had hit the news this week, and there's lots of rumbling about it. Not only the fact that he might come back, but beyond that fact that there might be a third fight between him and Evander Holyfield.
Exactly. And Holyfield making his comeback into the ring with Botha, right? Francis Botha, am I correct about that one?
Yeah, it was off, and now it's on again, I think.
Off and now it's on, and then White Buffalo himself, you know, and Holyfield getting back out there. And I believe, if I'm correct, it's one of the rants that we want to make. Isn't that right, Chris? Talking about Holyfield getting licensed is in Las Vegas that this fight is going to be staging at?
Yes, it is, which is, I can understand Vegas wanting to hold a big fight, but I don't understand why you're licensing a guy for only one fight. If you're going to license him, then why won't you fully license him? Why are you licensing him for only one fight? It seems like you're trying to play both ends of the, you know, I don't really know what the terminology I'm looking for exactly, but basically it's like, I don't understand. I just don't understand why you give a guy a license for one fight. Why not just give Edwin Valero a license for one fight in Vegas as well then? It doesn't make sense. Either you approve of him fighting or you don't.
Well, I can give you the answer to that one right away because Edwin Valero does not bring the draw that Holyfield does. You know, there's still a lot of people that from the general public and media, mainstream media, they're still going to go and witness Evander the Real Deal Holyfield. That's, you know, I mean, it boils down to who brings what to the table, and Holyfield obviously brings a big, huge 18-ounce, 24-ounce steak on that plate.
Mm-hmm. Money talks. Well, that's as simple as it is.
Exactly, you know, but you're right, Chris. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, is it kind of a, okay, we see you're old yet? let's give you a license just for this one particular night with both the White Buffalo guy. And see if we're, are we flirting with it? Are we flirting with giving you a shot, maybe possibly having a way back into the heavyweight division and getting a crack at one of the Klitschko brothers? Or maybe the Giant again, or even with David Haye. I mean, I don't know. I mean, that to me would lead, if anything, if that's what they're looking for, what good does it do for Evander Holyfield having just that one particular night license for? Because obviously he's going to have to go back and work and get in another license, so it kind of puts him back on the burner once again, right?
Yeah, you know what actually the sad thing is? He's probably in better shape at this stage than Botha is. Botha's a guy that tried to do mixed martial arts and K-1, which is a form of kickboxing, over in Japan and Europe when his boxing career kind of washed out. Didn't have much success at all. He got knocked out by a guy that was a complete washout as a boxer named Mighty Mo. So Botha's actually on more of a downside than Holyfield.
Yeah, Mighty Mo, my Puerto Rican brother out of Puerto Rico, Rob Rilla, you on the line, brother. What you think about this? Yo, Rob. Yeah, Rob. Come on, man. Let me in. I let you in. You're not even on.
Yo, Rob, while we're in between, man, I think that, you know, when you get a chance, you might have to rehook up your Skype. You're getting a lot of every other sentence. It sounds like you're underwater again.
Really? I'm not hearing that over here. Huh. I don't know. Sometimes it acts a little funny. How's it sound now?
It's doing it. It's going in and out, man. You'll sound normal 1 second, and the next minute it sounds like you're blowing through a straw in a glass.
I think that's just his way of being ahead of the curve, man. It's like with the music, you got the auto-tune. He's taking it to the radio now. That's what he's doing. We just don't know it yet.
You just don't know it, Chris. You don't even know it. You don't even know the master plan, brother. Hey, well, you know, man, there's not a whole lot more to talk about, but we're going to go really quick into Chris's MMA in the cage, and then after that, I think we're going to probably shut down the show because, like I said, we're almost close to the end. So here goes the intro for Chris in the Cage MMA Report.
Have you ever asked yourselves in an hour of meditation, which everyone finds during the day, how long we have been striving for greatness. It is a privilege to fight.
We are warriors.
It is pledged that the winner will allow the loser to hold a proper funeral ritual.
There are no paths between lions and men.
Sir, you got a horn face.
What's up, fellas? So, not a whole lot going on this week in MMA because of the big boxing event, but last Sunday night, I believe it was, or was it Saturday, WEC 47 took place. Pretty exciting card as usual on the Versus Network. Jens Pulver, guy that was one of the pioneers in the sport, ended up losing in the first round, gave a great retirement. Well, he didn't retire afterwards, but gave a really great speech afterwards. It's unfortunate. We're finally starting to see these MMA guys get later in their career now that the sport's been around long enough where they're starting to get past their prime, much like boxers do nowadays, and they're trying to hold on, but there's nothing left in the tank. Aside from that, though, co-main event, we had the returning former bantamweight champion Miguel Torres, supposed to be his road back to the title, but unfortunately Joseph Benavidez had other plans. Joseph Benavidez, small little guy, came out there and handed it to him on the feet, put him on the background, opened a huge gash on his forehead, looked like someone hit him with the axe, and ended up catching poor Miguel Torres and choking him out, leaving him a bloody mess. Just a really unfortunate incident, real setback for the former champion Miguel Torres, but, you know, great win for Joseph Benavidez, a guy that's fighting out of my city, so good to see one of Uriah Faber's fellow campmates having success. And in the main event, we had the current, or now former, bantamweight champion Brian Bowles lose his title to Dominic Cruz, a young challenger. Dominic Cruz was handing this kid on the feet, had some really unorthodox footwork, really unorthodox movement. I've never really seen an MMA fighter in the kind of position and stance he did. Really had Bowles puzzled the whole time, but unfortunately we had an anticlimactic ending as Brian Bowles decided to quit after the second round. Word is, from what he said and what he posted on Twitter, he broke his hand in the first punch. And rather than continue to fight on, much like Uriah Faber did earlier last year, actually fought with the broken hand for five rounds, Bowles decided to call it a day and just give his title away, essentially. So, I don't know, there's a lot of mixed feelings by fans about that, whether or not he should try to continue or not with one hand. Hard to say, but either way, new bantamweight champion Dominic Cruz. So, you know, looking forward to his fight next, probably be against Joseph Benavidez, who was on the undercard. Good event. Aside from that, last night on Spike TV, we had the premiere of George St. Pierre versus Dan Hardy, UFC primetime, much in the mold of HBO's 24/7, debuted to 1 million viewers, so pretty popular, building up this next UFC, which is 111, I believe. George St. Pierre is going to defend his title. Should be a pretty exciting fight. It's good to see that UFC is starting to put some money into the promotions, much like HBO, for what they think is one of their biggest stars and building for one of their biggest fights for the year. So, like I said, slow week coming up this week, but next week we have another UFC event, and this month, much like with boxing, it's pretty loaded with MMA after this brief respite going on.
Oh, are we back on? Well, there you go, man. The MMA report brought to you by Chris in the Cage. Another good news is that we're going to be trying to do a separate hour of MMA show for Chris to get on there and interview some fighters. So we're working on that. We'll put a lot of work into that. Hopefully we can have that out within another month or so, and you'll be able to catch an hour. Or I don't know if it's going to go an hour. I don't know if it's going to go two. It really depends on you know, how Chris wants to format it. Is there going to be enough to broadcast over 2 hours? But we, and that doesn't mean that he's going to leave his 10-minute spot, 15-minute spot here on leaving the ring and giving us the MMA report, because we do have fans that do like to hear the MMA report from Chris 916 out of Sacramento.
That's right. Y'all ain't getting rid of me that easy.
But anyways, man, with that, I keep shining in on Rob Riddle, but he don't say nothing. You know, he's on right now, but he don't say nothing. He just stays quiet. He's like, come on, man. Let me do. Okay, you're on. I'm saying, Rob, you there? Yoo-hoo. Yeah, yo. Oh, okay, pues. another day, man. But, hey, I tell you what, guys, it's always a pleasure to have everybody on.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah.
Dave, real quick before you shut it down, you and Chris and everybody in the chat room, you guys can let me know right now, do you want to hear the old and the new Joshua Cloudy voicemail, or should we just shut the show down right now?
I want to hear the new Joshua Cloudy voicemail.
Well, I got to play the old one first so you can appreciate the professionalism he put into the new one.
Okay, let's play it.
All right, I'll play the old one first, and then we'll discuss. And then we'll play the new one. All right, here it goes.
Well, this is just send this to the phone right now, but please leave a message and a number, and I'll go back to you as soon as I can. Please have a nice day. May God bless you. I love you. I'm beginning to be sure.
Record your message after the tone.
All right, so that was the old one.
Was that even a voice? I mean, was that even a voice message? I mean, I don't.
It sounded like he was in the gym, and yeah, it's a just terrible voicemail. I've heard it many times.
Okay, so let's hear the new one now.
All right, so here's the new improved Joshua Cloudy voicemail that he just did today.
Hi, this is Joshua. No, like, I don't want to pick up your call, but I'm very busy. Please, you can leave me a message. I'll get back to you as soon as I can. May God bless you. Have a nice day. Anna, maybe God bless you, Cheryl.
Record your message after the tone.
Look at that.
Hey, it's probably directed to you, Strike. I'm really busy now, Strike. Heart, okay.
It's funny. I got a hold of so many different members of his camp today. You know, is this Joshua? No. Okay. So, and then I went through that all day. They told me, call him at 6 o'clock. He'll be ready at 6 o'clock. I call at 6 o'clock. Joshua Cotty's in bed, his camp tells me. I call him, and this is Dallas time. This is at 7 o'clock, me. Then I call him, you know, shortly after our show starts, and his phone is off. I called him once, and his phone wasn't. Then I called him again during our break, and then he's officially out for the night. So.
Wow. Well, hopefully, man. Well, you know, he's sleeping at the right moments. Just don't sleep on a Saturday night there, Joshua Cloudy.
Yeah, you can't say he isn't going to be well-rested. I'll be the first one to tell you that. This man sleeps a lot. I've woken him up a few times.
And you know, speaking about sleep, I'm gonna need that in a little bit. I don't sleep too well, man. You know, I'm always up doing stuff and trying to get things taken care of. And you know, when we started doing this whole boxing, even on YouTube, it was really, you know, like, okay, this is fun. But now I have to really honestly say that it has became a job, a full time job for me. You know,
you know, real quick, I just wanted to mention, you know, congratulations. It's been officially a year since you started. So
exactly.
I think anyone that's been listening to the show since we started, you know, I think it's grown. It's got a lot more professional. I think we've obviously had the privilege of having a lot better, not better guests, but, you know, bigger, more well-known guests as, you know, the show's kind of grown. We've gotten a bigger audience, you know, and that's thanks to all the people that support the show and the sponsors and, you know, all the people behind the scenes that helped, you know, that aren't, maybe may not be on the show, like Blood, myself, Strike Hearts, David Chen, Rob, and yourself, but, you know, there's a lot of people that help out with this, you know. We're only a year in, so hopefully, you know, we can only continue to get bigger and better.
It bigger and better and stronger, and, you know, and I was looking back at this, and Chicky, our girl from Ireland, she was the one that reminded me. She's all, hey, it's anniversary. And I was like, oh, my God, time has really flied. And I was going back and looking at how many people we've had on this show, and you got to say it. The list is massive. It's huge. I mean, we have so many people. You know, from Eddie Chambers is going to be fighting. He's been on the show. From Luis Collazo, Paul Williams, Jack Lowe, Alfonso Gomez, Roy Jones. The prospects is a huge list of prospects we've had, from veteran fighters, from Hall of Famers. The list goes on, and it's really, honestly, it's got to be a big thank you. And I can't keep saying it enough. Thank you to everybody that's helped out the show, all the way down from Jesse Red, my boy Red, from Art G, my man from Stand and Fight, Alex Smear, Zansky. I always have to practice her name, you know, because it's such a weird name. Serafina, all the way down from every. And if I'm missing your name, please, I apologize. You know, don't jump all over me or punch me in the eye when you see me. Hey, what about me, fool? You know, so, but all the hardcore fight fans, especially the mail you guys sent out to us and questions, and really, I don't look at myself any other different. I don't think the guys on the panel either. I look at myself as a hardcore fight fan like you. If you meet me in person, you'll find out real quick, because I'm just a regular homeboy that loves to talk about boxing and will sit there for hours and hours with you and talk about boxing. Now, emails, trading emails, forget about it. You ain't going to get that from me a whole lot, man. But I'm working on it. I'm working on it. I'm responding back to people. I'm terrible at it, Strike, you know. And everybody jumps me like, yo, man, you got to answer back. It's just my fingers don't type it back.
I don't check mine either, man. I don't check mine either.
And we got to. And we got to, because everybody does send us stuff, and then they probably figure like, they don't want to talk to you. That's not true. I like to be interactive with that person. I like to be right there, like, hey, what's up, you know? Because, unfortunately, my process, the way I think, is a lot faster than my little fingers, man, you know? And I still got – I'm new to doing the whole computer stuff. I've only been on the computer like 2 years, so I still use my two fingers, you know what I mean, to type in stuff, man. So, you know,
yeah,
like, click, click,
I'm
click, click,
way.
You know? But
yeah,
anyway,
I don't know, man, the whole technology thing. I never caught on to it either. I got people giving me hell for – you know, not responding to them on Facebook or what. I'm like, I don't do that stuff. Call me on the phone.
Dave, I'm drowning. Okay, well, that's just a sign for us to get off the air now, man, because obviously there's something going on with the Skype. Hey, but once again, tune in next week, Thursday. This Saturday, don't miss the Manny Pacquiao fight with Josh McCullough. But Friday night and Saturday morning, we are going to replay the roundtable. And also, we're going to be showing the Leave It in the Ring article of the people that were on the panel and the people you didn't get to hear that gave their prediction. So you want to go to Leave It in the Ring later on tomorrow in the morning to check out the MP3 and the quotes for certain people out there. They didn't come on the round table, but we were able to get them on audio about their take about the Joshua Calati versus Manny Pacquiao. I'm your host, 97 Rough, as your boy Strikeheart and 916. Your boy Blood will be back, and David Chen. So always, always tune in every Thursday night. Good night, brothers.
Shout out GYGB. I'm out.
See ya.